Okay, we're back on the agenda item. We're going to receive a presentation from Deirdre, Chair of the PDT, on Framework 21. Deirdre?
Thank you. The slides of this presentation are document number 3 behind the scallop tab, and there are also copies on the table for the audience. I was asked to briefly summarize a few issues for this agenda item, and I just want to clarify that all of the analyses that I'll be presenting today is the same analyses that you saw in November. There's no new information to present. The slides will hopefully cover these 5 major issues. I would be summarizing the proposed action to remind you what decisions you made in November related to this action. I'll try to clarify a few issues that have come up after the meeting that people have had some confusion about or misunderstandings about. I will summarize the Council's rationale and the main points that were made during that discussion to refresh your memory of discussions from November. We'll spend a little time in more detail than in November comparing the direct impacts of the proposed action to the higher F option, since that's the one that has been receiving attention. I won't be spending as much time as we did in November on the closure in the channel scenarios because that was much more under discussion in November. And lastly, to fully inform you of your any potential decisions today, any general implications of decisions or motions made today in terms of possible resubmissions of documents, and to give you an idea of the status of where different documents are, I'll just summarize some of those possible implications. So just as a review, there were 3 primary management issues that were covered in Framework 21. Again, it is a 1-year specification package, including fishery specifications for 2010, including setting an ABC for the first time, officially since the Magnuson Act was reauthorized for this fishery. This was also the first framework the Council had to consider measures to comply with the reasonable and prudent measure for sea turtle management. If you recall, we spent a good amount of time on that in November. Again, I won't be spending as much time at all on that issue today. But that was the primary management issue for Framework 21, all of those things in the first bullet. As usual, we review all of the area rotation adjustments in the specification package and recommend any changes in rotation schedules, any new closures, and so forth. The last management issue would be other measures. Again, this was sort of a pretty small list in compared to other frameworks we've done, but a handful of different adjustments specifically related to either general category management or the observer set-aside program. You also did make a handful of recommendations about changes to those programs. Again, focusing on the overall fishing mortality scenario, which dictates how many days at sea and access area trips are given to the fishery, as well as the general category overall allocation, this document considered 4 specific scenarios, and of course the no action alternative is always considered. This has been some confusion, but the no action alternative is not the same thing as the 2009 fishing year. The way that the scallop regulations are written, they are not written in a way that the exact same measures that are in place last year just roll over. That is not how the scallop management program works. There is a little bit more detail because of area rotation that if an access area was not open in one fishing year, it can't just, if it wasn't scheduled to reopen that following year, it doesn't, if it wasn't open the year before. So just there are some subtle differences definitely between no action and not really subtle, and the 2009 fishing year. So to clarify, again, that no action is 42 days at sea in the open areas for full-time vessels and 4 access area trips, whereas in 2009, the fishery had 5 access area trips and 37 days at sea. So they definitely are different. There were some other details about no action in terms of the IFQ program, if in fact it were delayed again and so forth. But the 4 general scenarios that were considered, we had 2 with a new closure in the Great South Channel at 2 different fishing mortality rates overall, and we had 2 scenarios with the new closure, again, at 2 different fishing rates. So that was the range of the options that were brought to you in November and fully analyzed. The proposed action that you selected in November is the no closure, so there would be no closure in the Great South Channel, and an overall fishing mortality rate of 0.20. This equates to 29 days at sea for full-time vessels and 4 access area trips, 1 in Nantucket Lightship, and 2 in Elephant Trunk and 1 in Delmarva. The table on the screen provides a breakdown of the average or about average catch we would expect from the different categories, the limited access, general category, and also clarifies what the different set-asides would be for research and observer compensation, as well as the incidental catch permits in the general category fishery. Total projected catch, again, is 41.5 million pounds under this scenario. The other proposed measures, very quickly, I described before there are some general category. There's an overall quota is given to that fishery, equivalent to 5% of the projected catch for the year. There's also a Northern Gulf of Maine hard tack that is specified in this framework. The incidental catch remained the same, again, is a soft tack. And there is a partial leasing alternative, if you recall, that you did include in the proposed measures to allow individual vessels with IFQ permits to lease quota during the year in smaller amounts than 100%. There were 2 specific measures adopted to comply with the turtle RPM. One was a seasonal closure in Delmarva, again, for the months of September and October, and also a 2-trip limit. Every vessel would be restricted to only be able to fish 2 mid-Atlantic access area trips during June 15th through October 31st. Again, these measures are designed to limit scallop fishing effort in the mid-Atlantic during the times of year when turtles are expected to be there. This was a measure that we had to consider specific measures to comply with in order to help the agency comply with this RPM by the 2010 fishing year. Again, all of the other set-asides and other measures that are typically in the framework were also included in Framework 21 and part of your proposed measures. So I have a few background slides to refresh your memory of the different information that was presented to you before your decision in November. I'll take a few minutes to go over the major points about the status of the resource to make sure everyone is again clear on that, what the specific recommendation from the SSC was, and some other key points about the different analyses that were presented in November. So to start with the status of the resource, Framework 21 does not modify the overfishing definition or any associated reference points related to overfishing. There are no alternatives in this document that would allow Framework 21 to do that. It was not considered in this framework whatsoever. SARC 45, again, is the one that was completed in 2007. It's generally done every 3 years on the scallop resource. And that SARC assessment workshop approved a model, and I just want to take a few minutes. There's been some confusion about the different models used and what they are and what they do, so I'll try to generally explain them. Approved a CASA model, a catch-at-size model that is used for identifying what reference points should be in this fishery and estimating biomass and fishing mortality. This CASA model is not the one that we use for projections. Instead, it looks back in time and assesses what the biomass and F has been. This was fully vetted through the SARC in 2007, and it was approved as the best method for scallop assessment process. Using this CASA model is how we got the new overfishing threshold of 0.29 at that time. So SARC 45 completely reviewed the model and approved an overfishing threshold of 0.29. The updates that we did in the PDT in the years in between assessments, we used the same exact CASA model, to be clear, with the same assumptions. All we did is integrate new data from 2007, 8, and preliminary information for 2009. So the same thing was done that was approved in the last SARC. And the updated values, as we presented in November and earlier to the committee, came in at about 0.28 fishing mortality for the fishery in 2008 and 0.30 for the fishery in 2009. We have tried, you feel like a broken record, to say every time this is presented that these are not final. They are preliminary estimates. The fishing year is still not even over. And the plan, and has been said from the beginning, is that all of these would still have to be reviewed in SARC 50, which is starting actually this month, and or February through June. They have several meetings leading up to the final assessment in June 2010. So the official status of this resource may or may not change based on the results of this SARC 50 meetings that are beginning in February. But as we said, until that time, the official status of the resource remains the same, which, to be clear, as many speakers have said before, the status of the scallop resource, overfishing is not occurring, and the stock is not overfished. SARC 50, again, as the plan has been and we've tried to communicate, is that this is the time that we would take these new years and look at them and possibly decide through various discussions if reference points need to change or not. And it's possible, or the plan definitely will be, to present a similar model that was presented to the SSC, actually with some modifications even since then, and to see if the assessment panel agrees with work that's being done that should be used to develop new reference points for this fishery. That's also the time when we would get the official review of the last two fishing years in terms of their fishing mortality rates, the final review of those. So now getting into the ABC and what the SSC did. Excuse me. As required by the New Magnuson Act, the SSC must recommend an ABC for 2010. The Scallop PDT started bringing some information to the SSC much earlier in 2009, and there were some back and forth. We went to the panel quite a few times, actually, and the request from the SSC was that we try to quantify the scientific uncertainty to help them establish an ABC for this fishery. And as it's been explained, this is not a small endeavor. It's different than the models that we use now don't allow us to quantify this actual uncertainty. And because we were working on Amendment 15, all of this work was done. So in the spring and summer and into our final meeting, we brought information in August to the SSC. The current model I was explaining before, CASA model, is unable to quantify this uncertainty. So a new model... The reason we explored a new model was because it was requested by the SSC specifically to help them come up with an ABC that had an associated quantified estimate of uncertainty. So this was presented in August to the SSC. The SSC's report was then presented to the council at the September council meeting. And the final ABC from that work came out to roughly 29,500 metric tons. Again, that's the 65.2 million pound value that you've heard about. That includes discards that should not be overlooked, roughly a little over 7 million pounds for discards and incidental catch, leaving roughly a 57.8 million pound ABC approved for the scallop fishery. As was discussed at the SSC meeting and in pretty detail, and as well at the council meeting, is that this calculation is based on an assumption, which is very important to keep in mind, that the fishery is spatially uniform. And we all know that is definitely not the case for the scallop fishery. When we have closed areas and we have area rotation, the fishery is on purpose put in different places, and the resource itself is not spatially uniform. It also assumes that all scallops that are exploitable and at a sustainable level are accessible to the scallop fishery as part of that 57.8 million pounds. Again, that is not true because of the closures that we have for EFH and groundfish. So in terms of 2010, to give you a sense of this, roughly 37% of that exploitable amount of biomass is in current closed areas or rotational areas that are not reopening in 2010. So roughly 37% of them. I have a slide later that breaks it out more specifically. So the fishing mortality targets and rates and thresholds you're talking about are actually going to be end up being on the part of the resource that is outside of this, on the remaining 53%. So that's the reason that we end up having these higher fishing mortality rates in the areas that are accessible to the fishery. Just to give you an example of this, the South Channel, the same area that we were talking about closing in this framework, under the proposed action, that's the 0.2 scenario, the estimated fishing mortality that is expected in that area is about 0.5 under the proposed action, and it would actually be around 0.7 under the higher F option. Again, that's due to the higher days at sea that would come with that alternative. So that is just an example of some areas are clearly at fishing mortalities much higher than targets or thresholds and everything, and then you have a bunch of areas that are having fishing mortality of zero. But when you spatially average them all together is when you get into these values closer to your targets and thresholds. But because this fishery is so ununiform in this nature, that's the reason why when an overall fishing level is set not at your ABC but just below it or some amount below it, this is how you help prevent localized overfishing and allow those scallops that would have localized overfishing to grow more and provide more yield per animal to the fishery. And that's why you see these longer-term projections having higher yields when that F is not set at ABC. Again, this is just a slide that shows you the percentages of the exploitable biomass. In 2010, we had similar pie charts in our framework document that was presented in November. But in terms of the values on the top, they're kind of coming out reddish, brownish. Those are the 37% not accessible to the fishery. And starting with Nantucket Lightship and below are the areas that are accessible to the fishery, in 2010. Okay, so now getting into, kind of took a sidetrack there for a little bit to talk about the resource a little bit. That last slide shows you the realities that we're under and the constraints that the council is currently under because of these spatial issues with closures and area rotation. The next few slides will get into the ABC calculation a little bit more to get into this newer model that has been discussed somewhat within the framework and also in correspondence since November. The 2010 ABC calculation, again, is not based on the models we've used before. It's based on a newer developed stochastic yield per recruit model, again, specifically developed as requested by the SSC. And also, more importantly, is it's part of a much larger amendment that we've been working on since 2008, Amendment 15, which is going to set up the overall ACLs for this FMP, which, again, that's kind of mid-process at this point. Very quickly, a stochastic model is a simulation in which ranges of values are used for each variable. So you know, for each variable, instead of using just one point like we've done in the past, which is a deterministic model, instead of assuming that we know the exact point for that model run, we use a range of values. So you know the actual certainty of the uncertainty related with each variable. And you run that, as was mentioned, 10,000 times to see. So that way the answer that you get gives you a quantified estimate of those uncertainties rather than just assuming you actually know the point estimate for that for each variable. So the SSC did use the results from this stochastic yield per recruit model when they set the ABC for 2010 because it was definitely voiced. They wanted to be able to have a quantified estimate. They were not... The original idea we brought to them was sort of more of a percentage buffer based on qualitative analyses about uncertainties in the assessment model and uncertainties that we know about the different variables about the resource. They were not satisfied with this, and this is why this was developed. So again, just to clarify, The 2010 ABC is a projection of what the F should be in the future based on assumptions about various parameters. Again, the full length of uncertainty associated with each variable. F estimates in a different way for 2008 and 2009 incorporate actual data. So this is looking backwards, whereas the ABC calculation is looking forwards. The estimates that were presented for 2008 and 2009, again, we're using the CASA model and using actual information to look back. To be clear, fishing mortality measures the rate of removal. It doesn't depend on the method used to calculate it, and it doesn't depend on the reference points it's being compared to. It's an actual rate. So the value you get, whether it's the model, you know, the model that you use says it's 0.28 or it's 0.29, it's a rate. It's not. It doesn't matter which model pumped it out or which reference point it's being compared to. It comes out as just a rate. So just to get into the specifics about the values to make sure that everyone is clear, for example, again, this is preliminary and not final, but if the F estimate for 2009 is 0.3, this value can and should still be compared to the current overfishing definition, which is 0.29, because that is the rate of removal for 2009 based on the fishery and biomass conditions that year. For 2010, the projected ABC is equivalent to a fishing mortality of 0.284. That also happens to be below the current overfishing definition threshold of 0.29, as well as the threshold or Fmax that was used in the SSC process of 0.37. Now, this is where it's been complicated and been confused, perhaps, for Framework 21. The council is charged with setting an F target so that two things occur, because we're in this transition, if you will, to potentially new reference points. The current overfishing threshold of 0.29 is what is in place. The council is not allowed, or it shouldn't set management so that fishing mortality or catch levels go above the overfishing threshold of 0.29. That's what's in place. In addition, catch cannot be above the current estimate of ABC. Again, this is a newer requirement from the recent Magnuson Act reauthorization set by the SSC. So these are the two things you had to keep in mind when setting your F target in November, that neither of those things should happen. So there's been some question or debate about, well, why can't the council just assume that Fmax, which is also the F threshold, should just be 0.37 because of the work the PDT is doing and because of the work the SSC reviewed? Why can't we just jump there now and assume that that's our F threshold for this framework? And while people have differences of opinion, I think the answer is actually pretty straightforward why the council can't just do that in this framework with this decision. The new Fmax, or this new model, entirely the new model and the Fmax it produces, still have not been formally peer-reviewed. The SSC was not asked to formally peer-review it. They were asked to set an ABC, and they can completely within their plan to use whatever information they want to do to set their ABC, and that's what they did. The SSC did not get into the details of different methods that could possibly be used to set Fmax at their meetings. That was not part of the term of reference. It's not what they did. That was all intended to be done at the full assessment process, again, starting in February. In addition, even if we ignore that and just say, okay, let's just assume that it's good to go, the SSC reviewed parts of it, the F threshold itself has to be integrated into an FMP before the council can actually use it as their reference point for overfishing. Changing the F threshold was not included in this framework. It is included in Amendment 15, the intended timeline after the assessment this summer is complete and we have an approved potentially new F threshold. Amendment 15 is the vehicle that will allow us to use that potentially new one, but the council has to make an actual decision to integrate and approve that F threshold before it can be used. That's actually what happened in Framework 19. There was a deliberate alternative in Framework 19, the last framework that did change your reference points. The council had to actively make a decision to do that, and you did that. You picked, you know, you supported what the SAW recommended. You picked a higher threshold in Framework 19, therefore could then pick your other decisions based on that new F threshold. We're not at the same place with this framework. We don't have an assessment that was recently just completed to give us that value and to integrate it into our framework. It wasn't an alternative in this framework. So a couple values, trying to put them all in one place to illustrate how the SSC advice on the ABC is integrated into current overfishing thresholds as well as the targets that are presented for Framework 21, tried to put everything together in one slide. Again, they're one of the reasons we didn't get too detailed about this in November is this is premature. I don't even like having it on this slide, but there's been so much interest and discussion about it, it's worth putting it up here. But as I said, it's premature because the assessment hasn't occurred yet, and the Amendment 15 document is really the one that is going to put forward all these new acronyms and set up how all of these things are going to be integrated together. But in the interest of making sure things are hopefully clear, the overfishing limit, which is a newer term for Amendment 15, but what we're used to is F threshold, again, the current one being the second one down, over 65 million pounds, is based on an overall F for 2010 of 0.29. That actually equates to something closer to 66.6 million pounds. I don't have it on there. I just have 65 plus, but so you know, it's about 66.6 million pounds under the current overfishing level or F threshold, if you want to call it that. The work, again, that we brought to the SSC, yes, the OFL is based on a higher estimate of F threshold or F max, which is somewhere in between 0.36 and 0.37, and that has an associated catch of 80 million pounds. The SSC agreed with the PDT's recommendation that AVC should be set after you integrate all sources of scientific uncertainty at a point that has a 25% chance of exceeding that OFL. So that's where the SSC recommendation comes in at 65.2 million pounds. Again, that has an overall F of 0.284. I already explained that includes discards and incidental catch. So the ABC for the fishery, a little bit lower, is 57.8. Again, I already pointed it out, this doesn't take into account any of the spatial issues with the fishery, any sources of management uncertainty in terms of days at sea carryover or upgrading of vessels to become more efficient, or LPUE estimates still not tracking close enough to actual LPUE. All of those things are not associated or integrated into that value yet. That all comes later in setting your target. And it also doesn't include anything about setting your overall OI when the council has to weigh other issues about bycatch and EFH and so forth. So then we get down to where we set our target. Again, the framework considered four scenarios. The range overall of those four scenarios, the overall landings, again, this is landings, it was from 41.5 million pounds to 53.5 million pounds. That was the full range of the four options considered. At that point, as it's been pointed out, the PDT did not have any overall recommendations in terms of a preferred option, neither did the committee. And at that point, it's the council's job to weigh those different levels of risk in terms of overfishing and the different impacts that the different scenarios have on the various economic and biological and EFH and all those other impacts is where it comes into which target the council ultimately selects. But to be clear, the council absolutely used scientific advice from its SSC, absolutely endorsed the recommendation from them about what the ABC should be, And by including the full range presented from the PDT, also use the scientific advice from your plan development team in terms of considering the range of F targets as well as selecting one of the four that were originally considered. So in not as long of a presentation, all of this was in the framework and presented and discussed in some varying degrees in November. So then the council's left with where should the F target be for 2010. And a lot of your discussion, if you recall from November, had to do with the fact that the revised estimates for the two recent fishing years were a good amount higher than what they were set out to originally be. For those 2 years, you did have an F target of 0.20, and using the same methods, just new data for those fishing years, the new estimates were coming in at 0.28 and 0.30 for those two fishing years. Again, keeping in mind that the threshold that you're currently under in this framework is 0.29, and the ABC that the SSC set for the framework is 0.28, the council then has to decide which target you feel comfortable with would keep you under both of those values. Just as a reminder, this didn't come up much at all at the November meeting, but did come up this morning. The Amendment 10 current overfishing definition does say that the F target and its guidance, it's not regulation, the guidance is that the F target should be 80% of your F threshold, and 80% of the current F threshold is 0.23. So, you know, without time, or if we just went with the guidance, this would have been a overall scenario the PDT could have brought to you. In the past, and in this action as well, the PDT recommended a lower F target overall because of the spatial issues mostly going on in this fishery. And this is completely within the guidance that the PDT can recommend a different value, lower or higher, for some reason explained. So for this framework, the PDT brought you actually several that were lower and one that was higher than the 80% rule that generally has been in place since Amendment 10. Point 2 was brought forward again because that is our status quo method for setting F target in recent years. Due to the spatial issues that go on with the fishery, this is a value that we have used in recent years, and it has performed pretty well, I would say, in the last 2 years that we've used it. Point 2.4, again, was brought to, and the PDT talked about this, this higher adjustment we felt was justified because of changes that we had made to some of the LPUE assumed catch levels in the fishery. As it was explained, we used to use a lower assumed amount of catch per day for this fishery, and now we, if you will, are catching up with the fishery in that catch rates are much higher, and we're using a higher assumption in our new work. So we do believe we have captured some of this source of uncertainty or some of the reasons that the target was so far shot in the recent years. And the other issue going on is some of the new work we were doing in Amendment 15, really getting at some of the management uncertainty and getting into that in more detail. But again, none of that is really fully blessed by this council in terms of management uncertainty until Amendment 15 is through the process. So that's the rationale, again, why we brought that range of targets to you. And they do, as we went through in November, have different amounts of risk and associated impacts. So to put everything on one slide, or I tried, the comparison of these two F strategies, and I think this is a fair characterization of the discussion you had in November. All of these things were touched on and had a healthy discussion about them. It comes down to that the F of 0.24 has higher landings and economic revenues for 2010, definitely, without a doubt, but lower landings and benefits after 2010. And we see this because we keep all other things the same. The reason that this performs not as high as the other one is because of localized overfishing, likely is what the model is suggesting anyway, in some areas as a result of the higher F. The F.20 most definitely has lower landings and revenues in 2010, but it also has less bycatch particularly of yellowtail and some other turtle issues we discussed. It has lower costs and higher long-term yields and benefits. In terms of those being marginal or not, I guess depends on who you are. Overall, I have a few slides later that get into the specific numbers, but in a nutshell, I think this slide covers the discussion that you had about these two, and that's where you left off in November, made your decision. So the questions I think you were left with: what level of risk is the council comfortable with? Which trade-offs come into this final decision between higher long-term yields and reduced bycatch versus higher short-term yield and less impacts in the first year? Other factors to consider, again, these things go on the side, is the ununiform nature of this fishery in terms of that buffer that's needed or should be recognized in terms of setting your target, as well as impacts on EFH, bycatch, turtles, economics, communities, et cetera. So this leads me to the next part briefly of the presentation that gets into the main council rationale that we had from the November council meeting. Again, the full council rationale is not always formalized in motions. Sometimes we get the benefit of that, but we on the staff instead listen to the council deliberations very closely during the meeting, capture them, listen to the audio, and then in turn make that part of the submission document we ultimately send to the agency. It's usually captured in the executive summary of a document to help explain the discussion that was took place. Again, this went over several hours in November, but in general could probably be boiled down to these three major issues that led to the council's final rationale for its decision. And that would be to reduce the risk of overfishing. The short-term economic impacts of year one are outweighed by the long-term benefits, biological and economic, associated in the longer-term look, and the reduced impacts on finfish bycatch, sea turtles, and EFH. This was included in the executive summary that's been on our website, I believe, since December 17th. And circulated somewhat before that, and so hopefully there's been time for that rationale to be out there. Now, I have a slide or two for each of these main points of rationale. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on the first one because I think we've done it in detail quite a bit going through the SSC recommendations, but this was a large part of your discussion, so I have a slide to review. In 2008, the F target, as we discussed in detail, was 0.2, and with associated landings of 44.4 million pounds is what we expected in 2008. Actual F, after it's being reestimated, again, still preliminary, but is looking closer to 0.28, and associated landings of 53 million pounds for the fishery. Again, this is about 8 million pounds over what was projected. 2009 F target was also 0.2, with associated landings of 45.9 million pounds. Actual F is looking closer to 0.30, and landings now actually are looking over 57 million pounds, again about an 11 million pound amount above what was projected. If you break this down into open area versus access area, since yes, much of this catch is capped by trip limits, or 30 million pounds roughly each year, so the rest is all coming out of open areas, there was probably over a 70% more catch in open areas than we thought originally were going to occur, did occur. So that does come from the days at sea, because the general category fisheries under a hard tack, the days at sea that were fished in both of those years did produce over 70% more catch from the days at sea than we had expected, since the access areas are controlled and so is the general category fishery. So the council discussed these in detail. It was also recognized that both the 0.24 and the 0.20 would in fact comply with being below the current overfishing threshold, as well as being below the ABC set by the SSC. But you also discussed that they would have a different level of risk, and you know that discussion went as it went. The council, I think some members definitely recognized the improvements made by the PDT in terms of that we're hopefully doing a more accurate job at estimating catch per day, and revisions have been made, and I think a few people were ready to accept those and assume that they were going to be much closer, and were ready to take that leap of faith or agreement so a higher F could be justified, whereas others, I think, felt that it was still untested, and we always seem to underestimate catch per day. So there was that discussion also. And the fact that even these types of things are going to be approved and reviewed by, or approved hopefully, but reviewed by the benchmark assessment this summer, and then we will get that additional confidence builder, I guess you could call it. So there was definitely the confusion with the different FMAXs, perhaps, the stuff used by the SSC to help them set ABC, as well as the current one that we are required to use. Again, to be clear, both are calculations of F, and specifically if the optimal level of F ends up changing and FMAX does change in the future after the assessment, the current rates still for 2008 and 2009, that doesn't affect them. They still are 0.3 or 0.28 if that in fact is what they end up being. Those rates would be unchanged, and they still would be, a good amount over the targets that were set for those fishing years. So getting into issue number two, the short-term economic impacts are outweighed by the longer-term benefits. Just a few slides about this. The revenues, producer and consumer surpluses, and total economic benefits for the proposed action are lower than the other alternatives in the short term. In 2010, it does have the lowest expected revenues and net economic benefits. This alternative does, however, exceed levels for all the other alternatives under consideration, except for the one that would have closed the channel with the lower F option, which wasn't seriously considered too much at the council level. But except for that one, it does outperform the no-action alternative, as well as the other ones considered in the next 6 or 7 years and further out as well. The proposed action will increase total economic benefits to the nation, as I said, compared to no action and the higher F alternative. Just some specific numbers there. Again, these were all presented in November and are included in your document in various places. The proposed action is expected to increase benefits to the nation on the order of 15 to 22 million pounds for the time period from 2010 to 2016. Compared to the higher F option, that would actually decrease benefits to the nation by 5 million pounds. Again, these are compared to the no-action alternative, not to each other. And for the longer time period, there's some more values there. So just putting a few numbers on one place so you can refer to them. Again, it was requested to compare these alternatives a little bit more closely. For today's presentation in November, we did it for all four of the scenarios, but I'm not going to do that today. The proposed action is in the center, and the higher F option is the column to the right. The proposed action is 29 days at sea versus 38 days at sea. In parentheses, to show you the difference between these two, this is a direct comparison of these alternatives compared to a lot of the document actually compares them both to the no action. This is a direct comparison to each other. There's a comparison in the projected catch, the projected revenue for the first year only, and then the time period after the 2010 fishing year into the future for several years, as well as the last two columns show you a comparison of including that first year reduction. And the parentheses and the difference between the two. So you can see, this is basically where your decision comes in about the short-term impacts compared to the longer-term benefits. I do want to point out, because it came up a couple times this morning, that these calculations and these economic analyses are not done because we think we know what scallop prices are going to be in the future. We do not. Nobody does, as it was pointed out. They are done so that the council can compare alternatives, and the same assumptions are used for every single scenario. So if for example, we are way off with the biological projections or off considerably, as was noted that we have been before in the past, that being way off will happen for all of the scenarios, not just one. So all of the relative changes in the scenarios would be impacted the same because everything's held constant. So the ranking in terms of which alternative performs over the others doesn't change. If we're way off and we, you know, think it's going to be 80 million pounds of catch again in terms of the ACT, that would be the same wrong assumption across the board. But the ranking of the alternatives wouldn't change. That's why we keep all those things consistent. So the ranking of the options are the same. We're not trying to say that we know how much revenue there's going to be in 2023. It's more to run these things out to see the difference between alternatives. And if wrong things are put into the model, they're put in consistently across the board. So it's not that these are promises or expected catches for future years. Definitely, these would always be reconsidered in future actions. So to get into the revenues a little bit more by year, this just shows you by year pulled out from different tables. The first year, the difference, as has been stated, it's rounded here to $41 million, but it's actually $40.4 million. The difference in terms of expected total revenue for the scallop fishery. I have the last 2 years there is our most updated estimate of what total revenue will be for the 2008 and 2009 fishery. Again, we'll continue looking at this, but those are the most updated values we have. And then each year it shows you after the first year, all of those are positive. For example, $11 million more revenue would be generated from the lower F compared to the higher F, and those are cumulative. Each year, that would be the increase going out by year. But again, it's not that these are based on future allocations and future decisions you're making in frameworks. Everything is held constant so that the ranking of these things stays the same, but it's not that, you know, we are telling you in 2015 under proposed action you will get 330 million pounds. That's not the purpose of these analyses at all. It's to allow you to compare alternatives. So a few more clarifications about the economic analyses. Again, I'm not going to take a lot of time to go through this because I think the council is pretty clear on the different types of analyses we do and why we do them. And we did try to clarify in some documents for this council meeting, specifically documents 2C and 2D, a little bit more detail about the economic analyses and why they're set up the way they do and the different assumptions that are made. And hopefully you've had a chance to review those already. I'll just hit on a few of them. That Framework 21 is required to show impacts of alternatives compared to the no-action. Cost-benefit analyses actually take projected catch and projected revenue and compare them to no-action. We don't take actual catch and actual revenue and compare them to projections. That would lead to biased results, and that's the reason we don't do that. No-action is not the same thing as 2009. I explained this before. And the difference is explained there in terms of allocations. Just want everyone to be clear. This is why we don't have a whole lot of analysis about the 2009 fishing year in the document, because those allocations are not on the table. That is not an alternative. There was no alternative in the document that included five trips and 37 days and an estimated catch of 57 million pounds. So it's not in the document. It wasn't available to you to pick. In terms of the 2010 fishing year. And again, in terms of impacts, it's not accurate to take the actual catch from 2009 and combine it with projected prices. It was pointed out by a couple speakers this morning that definitely the price in 2009 is not going to be the same price in 2010, and a lot of outside analyses have done that, and they've used the higher estimated prices for 2010 but use the 2009 catch. So a lot of these impacts are coming in higher or different than the council's documents. So we just wanted to explain that. In addition, some estimates have overlooked cost savings with lower days at sea. Again, I believe this is roughly our document estimates the fishery in total will save about $10 to $11 million in, again, vessel savings from lower days at sea. So that does, okay, and from the difference in days at sea of each vessel not having those nine additional days. For example, cost savings in 2010, that's what this one describes. Compared to no action, the proposed action projects an average decrease in revenue per vessel of about $99,000 for 2010, again, after these cost savings are taken into account and the price differences between fishing years are also taken into account. So the last point that led into the Council's rationale would be related to reduced impacts on finfish bycatch, sea turtles, and EFH. The lower F scenario has a lower area sweat projection than the higher F. The Councils did spend a substantial amount of time talking about area sweat, and this was a big part of your discussion in November. Related to yellowtail flounder, this action, more than in the past, has been even more so linked to the groundfish plan because of the yellowtail allocation as an ACL subcomponent for this fishery. And there are different projected amounts of yellowtail catch that the scallop fishery is likely to encounter in the 2010 fishing year and beyond. You can see the difference in metric tons that is estimated for Georges Bank and Southern New England yellowtail is described in that table. In summary, the higher F option would need 36 additional metric tons of yellowtail, which is about 33% of the current allocation. It would need an additional 33%. And 24 metric tons of Southern New England yellowtail would be required for the higher F to reduce the chance of exceeding that allocation under the higher F option, which is about 22% increase in allocation compared to what they're getting under the low F scenario. So just touching on turtles and habitat, Framework 21, as I already explained, does include specific measures to comply with RPMs that will minimize impacts on turtles. There were two specific measures adopted. It was definitely noted during your discussion that in terms of open area, limits on open area effort, the lower F scenario would also limit, in general, scallop fishing in the mid-Atlantic during the turtle season, just as a matter of there being fewer days at sea available to the fishery. This is not part of the technical package of RPM measures that is included in Framework 21, but it was definitely noted during your discussions. And the last point about EFH, when looking at the different area swept projections, both of the scenarios have lower area swept than the no-action alternative, as well as recent years. But 2010, the F is definitely lower in the channel for the lower F scenario, which was pointed out as being important due to issues going on with the HAPC process in that area in particular. So that concludes probably in several slides where the Council left off in November and is in much more detail in the executive summary of Framework 21 and how you came to your decision. The last few slides in this presentation go over the general implications of a possible resubmission if, in fact, the Council decides to revisit this decision and change the proposed action. We wanted to inform you of where these documents are and what some potential implications could be for the fishery and resources at the staff and the regional office. So Framework 21 and Framework 44 to the Groundfish Plan have both already been submitted, including measures that are based on the lower F proposed action scenario from the November Council meeting. If no changes are made today, Framework 21 will likely be implemented prior to June 15th, and Framework 44 will likely be implemented before May 1st. If the proposed action is changed today, staff will most likely definitely have to resubmit at least Framework 21 to include new analyses that are not in there for the higher F option. So the implications of a delay for Framework 21, again, it would push back our final submission likely to late February. This will again, having a similar effect on when it could be implemented around mid-July. Again, these are pretty best-case scenarios. The Framework 21 document, if it is not in place before June 15th, Nantucket Lightship would not open on June 15th as it's currently scheduled to do, and it would instead open whenever Framework 21 is expected to be implemented. Again, we're saying mid-July, so about a month. The other issues to note, and some of these would have been issues anyway because the framework is delayed as it is, it should be in place before March 1st, and already we're looking at June 15th. So some of these are issues already, and some of them are just exacerbated by a one-month delay. In particular, the turtle RPMs would not be in place until after the turtle season starts, which is generally June 15th through October 31st is the months of time that are of concern or of note from the biological opinion. So if the framework wouldn't be in place until mid-July, this might not be a major issue since it's related to access area trips, and many people may not be taking access area trips during the month of June in the Mid-Atlantic anyway, but it is to be noted that that would be potentially impacted by a delay. The research set-aside awards, again, cannot be officially relayed to the winners until Framework 21 is officially implemented. This is more of a problem for some applicants than others, probably, because some people we've heard are able to start their actual research. But again, officially in terms of the amounts, if the proposed action changes, for example, the amount of RSA available also changes, so a lot of those things are likely to change and more poundage would be available, and that could things might have to be revisited in terms of the RSA awards. General category vessels would not be permitted to lease partial allocations. That's a measure that was adopted in Framework 21. That would just be 1 month behind. But also of note is that the general category fishery already is under a pretty confusing first year in that they're under the no-action allocations for 2010 from last year until this framework is implemented. So it's just an additional month that they won't really know what their final allocation is for that fishing year, because there is a difference, you know, for the fishery overall and then also on an individual basis how much quota they're actually going to be entitled to for the 2010 fishing year. And again, not a major issue likely, but general category vessels would still be permitted to receive compensation for carrying an observer in access areas for any portion of a day. If you remember, part of your proposed action was be to limit that to 1 day, again, for just access area trips. So that's the framework, possible implications. In terms of the amendment process, this, I think, has been overlooked by probably almost everybody but the staff. Amendment 15 is way behind. Again, Amendment 15 submission has already been delayed based on the unplanned additional work that we've been doing related to post-Framework 21 decisions, reviewing these outside reports that have come up, reading letters, writing letters, so forth. If you remember at the September Council meeting, you made close to a dozen changes to the amendment, new alternatives that have to be still developed, included in our submission package to the agency. We haven't done any of that work. And so this submission document, which was supposed to happen already in January, has not happened. We have not submitted Amendment 15. And, you know, if there are no changes to the framework, of course, we will be returning right to that amendment and finishing that up, hoping to submit it mid-February, several weeks from now. And if that occurs, final action is still possible for June 2010 as it has been scheduled. We had a longer timeline. You know, things always come up, so we have one, so things would still be fine. However, if the framework is changed today and staff does need to resubmit Framework 21 with a different proposed action, it is likely that the Amendment 15 submission package would have to also then be delayed, and final action, it would most likely not be able to happen in June. If that doesn't happen in June, and I've worked on this with the regional office, we've really looked at these timelines closely, And this was the words from them, very, very, very unlikely that they would be in place by the start of the fishing year as required by the Magnuson Act. So whether these things are big or little, it's not, I don't know, but these are just the possible implications of changes to Framework 21 and its impacts on Amendment 15. In terms of Framework 44, again, that's the groundfish framework that was linked because of the yellowtail allocation of Georges Bank and Southern New England yellowtail flounder was based on the proposed action decision you made in November. Again, you decided that the fishery, the scallop fisheries, should receive 100% of their expected catch for 2010 and 90% of their expected catch for 2011 and 2012. The expected catch depends on which scenario we pick in the scallop management program. So there is a difference between the lower F and the higher F option, and those changes need to be addressed. So if it does change today or through your discussions, what does the council want to do with yellowtail flounder allocations is another thing you'll have to discuss today, whether you keep those percentages the same or you decide to keep the poundage the same or something else. That would have to be clarified today also. In terms of analyses, the Framework 44 analyses will have to eventually be the same as whatever's adopted for Framework 21. We do have the expected catch and some of the expected impacts on revenue for both fisheries for these scenarios already. And really the only big difference is looking at the first year. And we also do expect to probably revisit a lot of this for 2011 and 2012 anyway because of changes in the Georges Bank yellowtail assessments and future scallop actions, which will likely change the projected catch values anyway. So I have these slides. I'm not going to go into them, but in case you need them later or at all, these are the differences in metric tons for the scallop fishery compared to the groundfish fishery under the higher F or lower F option. Again, you'd have to actively decide if you want to stay with the 100% decision you made or not, but the difference in terms of metric tons is provided there and also below showing you if you decide to, for example, go with a higher F and give the scallop fishery 100% of what they need, it shows you the loss or what allocation would have to change for the groundfish fishery is provided below. So the first slide is Georges Bank. The second slide is Southern New England. So in terms of the implications for Framework 44, as usual, we were under the impression with a change like that and a different allocation for the groundfish fishery potentially, we would need to resubmit Framework 44, but we recently learned late last week that we wouldn't. And if the council makes these types of decisions today, the council could simply write a letter to NIMS explaining your decision if there are changes made, and we would not have to formally resubmit Framework 44. At some point, this analysis would have to be done as a final package and updated somehow to be determined still, but the framework itself wouldn't have to be slowed down, and as I understand it, the May 1st implementation could still be met even if changes are made related to this yellowtail scallop issue. So those are the implications. Rationale, again, a review of the analyses you saw in November, and that's all I have.
Okay, thank you, Dee. Council members, questions for Dee? Points of clarification, statements? Rip?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Dee, or Mr. Chairman, if I may, I've got a series of four questions here. If I could ask them separately, I think that would be easier. The first is, in many of the presentations that we heard, or at least primarily in one, there was discussion that we'd have to have a 50% increase in landings in order to be overfishing. I've looked at a number of different things. I can't come up with that. Do you have any comments on that?
Yeah, it was hard. I was trying to follow some of that too in the audience. I'm not exactly sure how the math worked out or what, you know, I'd have to talk to them about it in detail. But I think the point is that because a good percentage of the limited access fishery is allocated in trips with trip limits, that is a hard tack, essentially. So that portion of the fishery has a high likelihood that it won't be exceeded. It's the open area days. So the point being that the open area days estimate of catch that we have per day would have to be exceeded. I can't confirm that number. I don't haven't had a chance to do the math what percentage it would have to be exceeded by, but it definitely would have to be exceeded by a good amount to get closer to that ABC. I tried to make the point before that last year the days at sea catch that we estimated compared to the days at sea catch we got from open areas was 70% more than what we thought it was going to be. So yes, it has happened. Yes, we think we're doing a better job now, and it shouldn't happen to that degree again. But I don't have a number of you know how much it would have to be to actually exceed the ABC offhand.
Second question. It was stated in the same presentation that the PDT had endorsed the 0.24 option. It was my impression that the PDT had discussed both options, but the PDT didn't come to any definitive decision on one over the other.
Yes, that's a more accurate way to describe it. The PDT, again, we do spend the majority of our time developing this stuff and working out the numbers. We don't always have a very good opportunity at the end to sit back and have a good detailed discussion because of time. We never have the time to do that. But also, it was discussed at the PDT level that we do believe that's a lot of policy related to that in terms of all of the other things that have to go into your final decision about F-target that the PDT didn't want to get into. But, yes, the more accurate way is that we provided that range of options without a preferred strategy.
Also, there was a reference, or there have been multiple references, that if we took the 0.20 allocation alternative, that translates into a 25% reduction. Again, I've looked at the math both from the standpoint of pounds and dollars, and I can't come up with that same 25. I come up with between 12 to 13%. Not that's any more palatable to the industry, but do you have any comments on that 25% reduction?
I believe that's mostly driven by comparing 2010 proposed action under the lower F to the 2009 fishing year, which is 5 access area trips and 37 days at sea. That's where a lot of, understandably, the industry would go to compare what they're going to get next year to last year. And that's why mostly in our documents that direct comparison isn't there, because that was not an alternative in this framework. And instead, most of our stuff is compared to no action, which is closer to 50 million pounds with only 4 access area trips is the big difference. An access area trip is about 6 million pounds in and of itself. So none of the alternatives in the document had 5 access area trips in them.
And one final one, if I may. I'm trying to think about walking through what will happen if, in fact, we do make a mistake and there is overfishing in 2010. Goes under either scenario, but I think it's worse under the 0.24 scenario if Amendment 15 is delayed, because that's where we're going to implement the ACLs and AMs. But I'm wondering in my mind if as I understand it, if everything were implemented, and there was overfishing in 2010, that would be calculated in 2011 in terms of the translated into days, and those would be reduced in 2012. But if we delay Amendment 15 and don't have that, I wonder what then happens to that process.
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure how the timing would work out either. Amendment 15 is not the document or action that will set days at sea for 2011 or 2012. It's more of a overall amendment that's going to set up the structure for ACLs. We're going to have to do another framework next year, Framework 22, that will set the days at sea for 2011 and 2012. If we have good indications, if you know, we're going to start developing that late summer, August, September, which will set the days for 2011 and 2012. At that time, if we have a good feeling or no knowledge of what's going on in the fishery to, you know, affect decisions made for 2011 fishing year, we would try to do that. But it is pretty fast turnaround to have that to then set your management for 2011 and 12. But again, if it's reviewed at the end of the year when 2010 fishing year is over, and it's in that situation, I don't know if NIMS would do something separately, or I'm not really sure how to respond to that question. But Amendment 15 is not setting that stuff, so we won't have to know or have a sense of what the allocations will be for 2011 until more September-ish, August, September of next year.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If I may reserve the ability to make a statement at a later time after some of the questioning.
Questions, comments? Dr. Pierce?
Yeah, thank you, Deidre. That was a very thorough presentation. You brought me back a couple of months. You tread the same ground, and I'm glad you did, because it was an excellent refresher. And again, compliments to all the work that you've done since November to get the word out, to put together the framework, logic, the rationale. It was all very well done. And you also were very helpful to me when I asked you a number of questions, you know, over the phone. You provided me with some information that was very helpful. Just a couple of questions. Is the overfishing threshold equal to the so-called F max value?
Yes, and okay. It currently is 0.29.
Well, my next question was, F max is 0.37, correct? And you say no.
I say F max is not 0.37 currently. I did mean to mention during my report, I appreciate Drew pointing out the largest typo that's ever been made in Framework 21, and NIMS caught it right away. The slide they had with Framework 21 says it's 0.37. That was from a draft we were working on for the amendment, and it is not. The current F max is 0.29, which is equal to F threshold, which is equal to FMSY for this fishery until we get the full assessment review. It is what was used during the SSC process, definitely, and part of their decision and recommendation. But in terms of the overall fishery and where we are with this framework, it's 0.29.
Okay. Well, you jumped ahead a little bit. You referenced the SSC, appropriately so, regarding what they did, information they provided. And my question was, did the SSC base all of its recommendations to this council, especially regarding ABC, on its belief that the overfishing definition, the F threshold, the F max value was 0.37? I believe they did. So I based all of my assumptions since November, based my conclusions on the fact that we are not overfishing, because we used in November the FMAX value provided to us by the SSC and all the recommendations. So I guess, did the SSC make a mistake? Did the recommendations they provide to us in November, were they invalid because they used the wrong value?
No, I'm sorry if the slides were not clear. No, they didn't make a mistake. The FMAX that they used in that generated yield per recruit model is the FMAX from that work and that presentation and is what was used for their ABC. The next jump to where the council is with that information is, yes, that's where the ABC is based on, and you still, and that's fine, leaving it there, period, but the overfishing threshold is still 0.29, and so the F targets should stay under both of those things for this action.
Yeah. Thank you, Deidre. Mr. Chairman, at some time I'd like to have the SSC chair come forward to clarify a few points regarding their important recommendations and advice that they provided to us that, for me personally, has a great impact on my attitude, my opinion as to the decisions we made back in November. I think that would be very helpful. And I do have some other comments I'd like to make at some other time.
Terry.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm relieved to understand that we don't have to formally resubmit Framework 44, but my question for you, Pat, is, does your shop have time to recalculate the ACEs in time to get these sectors up and operational in May? June?
I'm just trying to understand the question. You mean if the council voted to change their recommendation, which would change the yellowtail, we would... I'm not sure whether we specifically discussed that. We did decide that it doesn't change the timeline on Framework 44, and so I don't think it specifically impacts our ability to implement Framework 44.
Sally?
Just in follow-up to that question, could we get some clarification on when people who are planning on participating in sectors could expect to have an updated PSC for their yellowtail allocations? I mean, I know that you just said that you think you can get framework done in time, the Framework 44 done in time for the start of the fishing year, but just as far as operationally, so people know how much they have to bring to the sectors. I feel like that's an important thing to know, so that you know, while the rules might be in place, people need to know exactly what the new numbers might be that they're working with.
I understand. I'm not entirely sure. This is all hard for all of us to figure out, I think, how all the pieces fit together. And so if the council changed Framework 21, of course, it impacts on our ability and the timeline for implementing Framework 21, which does directly impact on our ability to provide final numbers anyway for the groundfish industry. But I don't have a specific date. I mean, it is all linked together. And they all need to flow off of each other in a sense, I guess. So there is a linkage there, and it would have an impact. I don't have a good sense of specific dates.
Mary Beth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Going through your presentation, Deidre, we go back and forth between metric tons and pounds a lot and different F rates, and I just want to make sure that my interpretation of this is correct. And at the bottom of slide 10, reads in the last bullet, so an F level set below ABC will actually prevent localized overfishing and increase longer-term yields because fishing is non-uniform. So if you have an ABC that's equal to 0.284 and the alternatives we're considering today are all below that, then that's the outcome.
Yes.
Thank you.
Dave Gaethel.
Yeah. I think there's been a lot of clarification here today, but I can understand why the audience and a number of people on the council are confused by this process. And basically what we're doing is we are setting a fishing mortality rate. And then a year, year and a half later, after the fishing season is over, we're going back and calculating what the realized fishing mortality rate was. And for the last several years, that realized fishing mortality rate has exceeded the rate that you've set, in some cases fairly substantially. And we are constrained by the current law, which is says that we can't have a fishing rate that exceeds 0.29. Now, there's this number of 0.37 floating around out there, which has confused a number of people in the industry, and that's a number that is a number that people are working on. It's part of the next amendment, Amendment 15. We cannot set a fishing rate that equates to that. We don't even know if that number is right yet. That number is part of an ongoing process that will be peer-reviewed and will be determined whether it is right or not. The SSC used that number in setting an allowed biological catch. Now, what we have to do as the council is set an F rate, and it's basically a guess, that will not exceed 0.29. We can't set it, you know, in other words, yes, 0.20 and 0.24 on paper aren't 0.29. I'm not, you know, I may not be a rocket scientist, but even I can figure that out. But the fact is there's going to be a realized F rate a year and a half or so down the road from this that is going to be higher than that number based on everything that's happened in the last few years. And it may be substantially higher. So that gets to the second part of the equation, which is the amount of risk that people wish to take when they set that F rate and what that realized F rate will actually come out at. And if you set it at 0.24 based on the last few years and recognizing that improvements have been made, it appears that that number may come out higher than 0.29. If you set it at 0.20, it's probably going to come out higher than 0.20, but probably not 0.29. And that is the essence of this huge discussion, thousands of pages of documents, boiled down to about three pages. And so the other question I have is, in a letter that the State of Massachusetts Division of Marine Fisheries sent to the council, and I don't, is Paul still here? Or he states at the opening of the letter that there is science that was not considered. Now, I assume that science was this fishing mortality threshold of 0.37, but I'm not sure. So I will ask that question in a short time to his representative. In light of what you have been told, that is a number that we cannot consider under the law, is there any new science that has appeared since last November when we made our decision? And that would be my question to Deidre. And my question to Dr. Pierce would be, is my assumption about the letter correct?
No, in terms of the analyses in Framework 21, no, there's no new information. You've been provided with some additional reports and things generated by outside economic persons. But in terms of new information included in the document or even outside, I wouldn't characterize it as new science.
If I might, Mr. Chair, to Dr. Pierce, is the new science that you reference in this letter the SSC's calculation of 0.37 is the act?
It wasn't new science. It was the fact that the SSC information, the recommendations they provided to us, information they provided and recommendations they provided back in September around that time were not properly understood, were not aired the way they should have been. For example, the SSC provided an ABC based on a 25% probability of overfishing, and that was F0.29. So that's a 25% probability of overfishing. F is equal to 0.29. We picked 0.20. In addition, we didn't understand, and again, we'll see clarification from the chair of the SSC in a little while, we didn't understand that all of their recommendations were based on the fact that they were using FMAX of 0.37, the new revised value of FMAX. Again, we didn't change. We're not changing the reference point. We're not going from F max to F 0.1. We have a new value of the F max 0.37. The SSC recognized that. We didn't recognize that at the time, so we misunderstood the implications and the underpinnings of their particular recommendations. So 25% probability of overfishing at 0.29. 0.24, 0.24, less than 25%, well within the bounds. So I would like eventually to have that information clarified for us so we'll be in a better position to understand whether we truly were overfishing in 2009 or not.
Thank you for that clarification. I think these are really important points for the people in the audience to understand because this is the heart of this discussion. This is the part that the council has to do. You know, we have to abide by the law on one hand and make some hard choices on the other and basically read tea leaves. We have to read some tea leaves here and figure out how much the realized catch is going to be. And that's very difficult because the realized catch is never the actual catch. And, you know, we can use past performance as an indication of future performance, but we can't use it with any degree of certainty whatsoever. And that's where this element of risk comes in. And this risk analysis, and we have guidelines for that as well. We have to set it somewhere between 10 and 40%. We can't, you know, so I don't want people to think that decisions are based on, you know, pulling things out of the sky or people's personal preference for what they'd like to see back out of this at some other point. You know, it's not exactly a formulaic process, but it has pretty tight constraints. And I'm hoping that the audience will understand some of this a lot better by the time this discussion is through. Thank you.
Dave Preble.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. There's been, and this points it up very well, there's been across the board in almost everything that I've read, particularly the stuff that's come from the public and particularly from the politicians, there's been a confusion about what is meant by uncertainty. And this really, really points it out very well. What Dr. Pierce is talking about is the scientific uncertainty, which the SSC assigns when they're telling us what the OFL and the allowed biological catch should be. What David is talking about is the uncertainty that the council works with, and that's the management uncertainty. They are two separate things, and the audience has pretty much not accepted or realized that, or some haven't. And I think we need to understand what we're dealing with when we talk about the difference between scientific uncertainty, what the SSC does, and management uncertainty, which is what the council does. Thank you.
Rick Roberts.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's good to be with your council today, as always. So I just wanted to follow up on a point that Dave Gaethel made about risk, and specifically, if you look back at the council's November decision about the rationale for the decision, I think one of the primary drivers there was the perceived risk of exceeding the target F. And that reflected the concern that came out of the last 2 years' actual results, where we look back at 2008 and 2009. And, in fact, the preliminary results suggest that the target F was substantially exceeded, recognizing that was just one of the factors in the decision. But I think it was a very substantial factor. And so one of the points that I think we might benefit from some additional clarification is on the extent to which management uncertainty is accounted for in the new LPUE projections in Framework 21 associated with open area DAS catch. And I raise this point because I did have an opportunity to go back and review that portion of the audio file from the meeting. And at the 1 hour and 15 minute mark, I had an interaction with Deirdre at that point about this very question. And so I had originally asked if the how much more conservative the new LPUE was relative to the existing one in Framework 19. And the response was that it was definitely a few hundred pounds higher, but we didn't have those figures in front of us at the time. So it was left at that. And so I went back and looked at Framework 19 and looking at page 44 where the analysis of LPUE related to open area DAS catch is, the value is 1,172 pounds per day. By contrast here, I think in 21, we see on page 26 of the document that the open area DAS value is 1,700 pounds, which is a difference of 45%. So it's 45% higher than the open area LPUE figure that was used in Framework 19, which I think is relevant in terms of the extent to which we were accounting for management uncertainty on that open area DAS catch, because we've been through this discussion of management uncertainty in our parallel action on Amendment 15, and I think we pointed out quite a few times in the past that if we account for the uncertainty associated with open area days catch, we've captured the bulk of the management uncertainty in this fishery. So I think this point is relevant, but I think we might benefit from some additional clarification, because reflecting back on the November meeting, we did discuss it, but I don't know how accurately we quantified it. And Deirdre, I don't know if you could comment on that for us, but again, I was trying to reconcile what we discussed then with what I see here, and having pulled Framework 19 and looking at the current document. But it seems that there is in fact a difference there of about 528 pounds in the LPUE figure.
Yeah, I'm sure the numbers you pulled out are accurate, and as I've noted, we did two major things differently in this framework than we did in the last framework, and one of them is definitely adjusting the catch per day upwards, and whether it's several hundred, like I said, November, or 500 from that, I'm sure that that's definitely within the ballpark of what we did and has been noted as one of the major reasons we, as a PDT, have more confidence in our future projections of catch. I do know historically we always think we're getting better at it, and we've always been under. Even in the years I've been involved and before that, even more so, I understand. I do hear still from the industry that our current estimates are too low and that they catch more per day at sea in open areas, some to the degree of bragging that it's, you know, way over what we have. So whether we're there, I don't know. The fishery is definitely more and more efficient each year, and vessels are more and more efficient. So whether we have it now, I can't say, but definitely 500 sounds within the ballpark of the adjustment we probably made from Framework 19 compared to this framework.
Just to follow up, Mr. Chairman. Deirdre, thank you for that response, and thanks again for an excellent presentation of all the facts today. So thank you.
Dr. Pierce.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I don't know what your timetable is for the remainder of this discussion and when you'd entertain a motion, but before we get to that point, I really would like to have the chair of the SSC get to the microphone and to address some of these issues, clarify the SSC position, especially as it relates to, you know, what FMAX did they use and why did they use it. That, I think, would be extremely helpful when we eventually get to the discussion as to actual reconsideration.
Yeah, to your question on timetable, I'd like to give every council member an opportunity who hasn't spoke to ask questions or whatever it is they want to say, and then I would be looking for a motion, but we'll ask the chair from the SSC to come to the table at that time. Mary Beth?
Yeah, I just had a question as well to the chair. When you started the discussion, you said we were, questions for Deirdre, questions on the information. We seem to have slid down a different track where some people are making their arguments. And are we going to try to keep this particular section of our discussion questions?
Rip.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If I might, to the service, just ask a follow-up question that pertaining to the previous Framework 44 question in the Yellowtail. If we made a decision which said we revisited or changed the allocation in Framework 21, but kept the Yellowtail at the same poundage that it is currently at in Framework 21. Would that make your work with the sectors easier to accomplish?
I don't think it necessarily makes our work with the sectors easier to accomplish, but it certainly does, I think, have a bigger impact on Framework 21 and Framework 44, because the assumption right now is for 2010, 100% of what the scallop industry is necessary, in a sense, for the bycatch in the scallop industry. And if you change the effort in the scallop fishery without changing the bycatch, you've changed that assumption, which does change the documents and puts us in a different situation. And Gene, you may want to comment, but I don't see how we could. I mean, the fact of the matter is then that the scallop industry would be catching more yellowtail, which effectively impacts on the achievement of the accountability of the ACLs and potentially triggers the accountability measures in the groundfish fishery.
Mr. Libby?
A question for Deirdre. It looks like, I know it's been debated here a couple times, that if this CASA model holds for 2009, that we actually did have overfishing. Now, if we go to 0.24 and there is overfishing, what happens to that overage?
From 2009 or 2010?
2010.
We would have to reduce it later. We're not under AMs yet, which would be kind of a different process. But, yes, if we exceed levels beyond where actually overfishing is occurring, we will have to account for that in our next framework and reduce effort, I think, if that's your question. But just so you're clear, the 2009 preliminary estimate of 0.30 will be reviewed at the assessment this summer, as will the reference point of 0.29. So it's very likely that both of those things could be a different value, as we've been discussing, that the 0.29, chances are we're going to hear a reference point after the assessment that's not 0.29 or 0.37, likely something in between. So the actual status of 2009 officially would depend on that assessment result. So it's not that we would, go back to the 0.29 for 2009 if something else was approved by the assessment this summer. Does that help?
Well, I guess the basic question is there is some accountability measure in there if it does go over this year, correct? For next year.
No, the accountability measures wouldn't be effective, technically as an accountability measure until Amendment 15 adopts them. Amendment 15, we haven't, finished yet. The accountability measures likely from Amendment 15 would be day at sea reductions equivalent to any overages, but we're not there yet. This fishery is not required to have AMs until 2011. So indirectly, we would either just cut back effort to account for that, or it would, go unaffected until AMs are in place after Amendment 15.
Not really, but thank you.
Anyone who hasn't spoke? Mike Leary?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Deidre, on slide 20, the revisions that you made in that 0.24 estimate, and going to Rick's comments. The question is, if I understand this correctly, you added 30 additional active permits. Is that what you said in November? Is that correct?
I think it's 25. It went to 340.
All right, so if we have 340 active vessels now, and each one of those got caught an additional 528 pounds per open access, open area trip, compared to the 2008,
calculation for 2009. Is that a correct assumption?
I was with you with the vessels, 340 vessels. What was your second?
The revisions that you went from 1,172 pounds per open access day to 1,700 pounds per day. So do we have 340 times 37 times 528? At 0.24, and that still comes down to the 0.29?
Is your question how we...
Well, my question is relative to the revisions. Is that correct, assuming what I just said, what the revisions were, that made that 0.24 stay under the...
Yeah, it's not quite as direct like that, but yes, when we do it in the reverse, we get an amount of catch, and then we later figure out how many days that means for everybody. But essentially, we know how much catch should come out of the ocean, and then we would be applying a higher LPUE estimate per day and more vessels than we were in the past. So in reverse, yes, both of those, if the question is... Does both 0.20 and 0.24 include these new adjustments? The answer is yes.
Okay, and that was well under the 0.29.
Yes.
Okay. Rodney?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a couple questions. One is yellowtails. My understanding is that we're going to allow them to catch the yellowtails, but they have to keep them and bring them in, correct? That's for the year 2010? Correct. So by us doing that, we're actually going to know how many yellowtails we catch. Right now we're making prediction on a couple of boats taking observers and what they catch. That doesn't mean the whole fleet is catching them. So we'll actually know what the actual yellowtail bycatch that the scallop industry needs to operate. That's one. The other one The other question I want to go back is to Deidre. How do you determine the efficiency on these boats? You said some people have even bragged about it. Is that how you determine it? Well, I just need to be clear on that because I know people that get up to that mic and just to prove their point, they'll lie. So,
really?
Or this mic. But.
No, that is not how we do it. We use actual landings data and figure it out per day. We use every single vessel individually, all permit types, all year. We use actual fishing data.
Well, you threw me off when you said people are bragging about it. That's what threw me off.
Anyone else who hasn't spoken? Dr. Weinberg?
Thank you. I just have a comment, probably a question for Deirdre. And it seems that the difference between the 41 million pounds and the 47 million pounds, the two numbers that seem to be talked about, are basically biomass of scallops. And as a population biologist, I'm thinking in terms of the size structure of the scallops that are actually going to be harvested. So if the extra 6 million pounds are large scallops, that would be one thing. But if they were small scallops and we're thinking about numbers-based mortality, that, in fact, could be a quite different estimate of F. So I was wondering if there's any consideration of, given what you know about the stock right now, what sort of recruitment seems to be coming in, or if those extra 6 million pounds are harvested, what's likely to be taken?
I may lean on Deborah to respond to this too, but in general sense, our estimates do include a size structure. It is part of the projections that are done for each of these scenarios, includes a size structure difference under any of the F options. And currently, right now, recruitment has been lower than we've had in recent years, and a lot of the biomass, as we've explained, is smaller than yet exploitable. The 2006 biomass year class, as I understand, we did have good recruitment that year, and that will be showing up in the fishery. We've heard anecdotally that they're already seeing small scallops coming up in the gear, even though they have 4-inch gear. So the reason that you actually see these long-term projections with increasing yield in future years is because that F is lower now when those scallops are still small, and they are going to grow a lot, the 2006 year class, for the 2011 fishing year. it is another reason you see those larger yields in 2011. That year class will start showing up, you know, on the docks, you know, in the gear. They already are seeing it now, which is probably having some impacts on that year class because it's being caught in the fishery currently. But, yes, our models do include a size structure, and I do believe, actually, that the size under the higher F option of the different, you know, U10, U20, the size structure of those, there are fewer of the larger scallops longer term under that scenario compared to some of the others.
Jim Odlin, then Mark Gibson.
Yeah, in November, I'd ask the question that when we were discussing the adjustments you made, the CPUE and the number of active vessels, that if you were comfortable with those numbers, and you said you were very comfortable. And I think that is reflected in that it would, that in the percentage chance of exceeding ABC. So to me, there's nothing changed in that statement that you made to us, that you were comfortable with this, with these assumptions, with the adjustments that you made.
I'm hoping nothing has really changed since November. We're still comfortable with all of those recommendations. It was, I think, the other elements that went into your decision, ultimately, not just the one overfishing risk issue, but it was pointed out by others, not me, that, well, you've told us that before, and, you know, you've been wrong.
Mark Gibson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thanks to Dave Gaethel for, as usual, quickly cutting through a lot of the fog on uncertainties about projected realized F rates and legal FMF maxes versus those under development. I think this presentation does a very good job on the economic, or the economic comparative anatomy in an economic sense of the two possible F scenarios, and nothing really surprising came out of it to me, or last November, that if you fish harder now, you get some more money now, and if you don't, maybe there's some more down the road. And it's not surprising industry or elected officials' responses either, that for a lot of money to give up right now, you might get a marginal gain down the road. So I can see why they've jumped all over this. Bird in the hand is worth more than two in the bush. You know, in a recessionary economic environment, that's pretty clear and pretty understandable. What I'm looking for, and haven't seen it, maybe it's a question more for Dr. Hart, is where's the comparative anatomy of the stock response? And maybe it's a little bit about where Dr. Jim was leading to. If we fish less now, it's my understanding that we have been fishing on off of a fair, some strong recruitments in the past, and that those have essentially worked their way through the fishery and were posed to be exposed to some weaker recruitments in terms of supporting the fishery. Is there some analysis that says if we leave more biomass in the water now, future recruitment variations might be attenuated, that we might have more stable recruitment down the road instead of this fall-off opposed to have? And I don't think I've seen anything on that now, but the longer-term stock stability interests me in terms of the recruitment variation, and I just don't know what's understood about that. If recruitment is, you know, completely decoupled from spawning biomass, then perhaps there's nothing to be gained by stockpiling biomass now. If there is some hope that we can stabilize recruitment, then there is some rationale for stabilizing biomass and lower fishing mortality rates now.
Just a couple things. It's, as usual, it's very difficult to associate spawning biomass with recruitment. Recruitment is highly, highly variable with most mollusk stocks, including this one, and, in fact, most fishery stocks. There is some possibility in the mid-Atlantic. There is some indication that higher biomass leads to higher recruitment, but it's still very uncertain. The other issue is, I think you were mentioning what Jim was mentioning about, there's a large 2006 year class in both Georges Bank and the Mid-Atlantic, which are, I'm hearing reports from fishermen, in fact, are they should be about 4 inches and therefore just recruiting to the fishery.
And one reason why the model suggests longer, better long-term landings for the point two is that your class would benefit from reduced fishing now because they still have growth potential to it for the future years. So either a closure or the lower F would benefit that. So that's something that we do know about this large year class. There was strong recruitment 6-7 years ago, and we saw 2003, 2001, 2000, very strong year classes. And that's what much of the industry has been working on. And they're kind of being depleted now. And we had some poor recruitment in the mid-decade, and now we're seeing stronger recruitment again, which is one reason why you see this dip, no matter what the decision is for 2010, because this the new year class, 2006 year class, isn't quite ready in 2010, but they will contribute to much higher landings in, say, 2011, 12, and 13. I don't know if that helps.
Anyone who hasn't spoke? Okay, are we looking for a motion? There is one to be made. Dr. Pierce.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Before I make the motion, just a few brief introductory comments so council members in the audience will know exactly why I'm making this motion. Again, thank you for putting this Framework 21 back on the agenda. Very difficult decision, but frankly, it was the right thing to do. And certainly many people in the audience made that point, all the way from Governor Patrick and the correspondence to us, Congressman Barney Frank's representative, Representative Strauss and Quinn, Senator Tarr and Mayor Lang, who obviously made a very important point regarding the impact of this framework on New Bedford, $250 million. That's nothing that we can forget about. It's extremely important. At our November meeting, I suspect that most council members believe we were overfishing scallops in 2009. That was my understanding. I was strongly influenced by the conclusion that we were overfishing, very likely. That was the factor that convinced me to eventually vote for 0.20. We cannot allow overfishing, so the council appeared to have no choice. We had to go in that direction. The app at 0.24 just seemed to be very difficult, if not impossible, to justify. Therefore, we made that very important decision to allocate far fewer days to the limited access sea scallop fishery for 2010. We decided to reduce the days from 37 to 29, and that's a 22% increase. Now, after reflecting on our discussions regarding this decrease in days at sea, and after reviewing all the many documents I received at the November Council meeting, I concluded that important scientific advice was forgotten or simply misunderstood, more likely just misunderstood. And then after discussions with my director, Paul Diodati, he reached the same conclusion and then sent a letter to Pat Kirkle explaining our position and then emphasizing that the best scientific information inadvertently was not used by the council, including me, representing my agency. As I said, I voted for the 0.20. Now, referencing the plan development team and the SSC documents, we concluded that this council did not refer to very important plan development team and SSC findings. Consequently, our conclusion was and still is that the 2010 days at sea based on an F of 0.20 are far too restrictive and will provide for unnecessary, very dramatic 2010 economic loss and socioeconomic impact. We referred in our correspondence to Pat, and of course I've already mentioned it during these discussions this morning, that the SSC provided an ABC based on a 25% probability of overfishing. That was F equals 0.29, not 0.24 or 0.20. We selected the 0.20. The SSC approved and used an F max value of 0.37 as the overfishing threshold. It used the best scientific information available during all of its discussions, all of its recommendations, the FMACs provided by the center and reviewed by the plan development team this past summer. And again, the framework references that particular FMAX value. So at our November meeting, we used the 0.29 as the FMAX, and that led me to believe, all of us to believe, that we very likely were overfishing in 2009. So even if we were at a fishing mortality rate of 0.30 in 2009, we have every reason to believe we'll be nowhere near the FMAX value of 0.37. In fact, as already noted, Rich made this point, that all the new plan development team and SSC calculations and projections have considered higher CPUE in 2010. They considered uncertainty in natural mortality, growth, meat yield, selectivity, discard mortality, and non-capture mortality. Therefore, as noted by Deidre, unlike in 2009, with our exceeding our target of 0.20, we're far more certain about our projections in that we will be nowhere near the 0.37. The SSC concluded, and the plan development team concluded, that F equals 0.24 was a viable option. So, for this reason, I feel it's incumbent on the council to amend our decision to set fishing mortality at 0.20, almost one-half the FMAX value of 0.37, the one that cuts it by 22%. Steve Cadron, after I make my motion, when it's appropriate, Mr. Chairman, he can address some of the points that I've made, just to confirm what I have said as being the SSC position relative to the FMAX value and what defines overfishing. Again, we're not changing the FMAX concept. We're just revising the value consistent with the best scientific information available. So with that said, I would move to amend our previous decision of no closure in the Great Salt Channel and an overall F of 0.20 to be instead no closure in the Great Salt Channel and an overall F of 0.24.
Is there a second? Seconded by Rodney. Discussion. Mr. Gibson, point of order.
Don't you need a motion to formally reconsider the action, and then a subsequent motion as to how to amend that action if that is approved?
I don't believe so. I've consulted with the council attorney and been told that this motion is in order. If I'm misstating your advice, Gene, step in. The motion's in order. Mary Beth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I support this motion, and I also appreciated DeVore's comments about, growing scallops and the value to the fishery. And I think the industry did listen to that advice and is supportive of 0.24, which does reduce their effort from 2009 for those reasons, and they are sensitive to that. And even the recruitment issue, I'm not really that sure of, but I do know on page... Let's see if I get the page right. 134 of the document, it does show projected biomass, and it shows under both scenarios that the biomass will grow, and this is not something that would be harmful to the resource. The industry is not interested in impacting the resources in a negative way. They're in it for a long term. I think that they've certainly indicated that with their work with science and others, and I support the motion.
Roddy? Pat?
Thank you. I just want to advise the council, I encourage the council to be very, if your intention is to support this motion, to be very clear and specific about the rationale for that. You've established a very strong record for your November decision. I think it's important for you, you've had some of this discussion, but to have a very thorough discussion now, too, on any new information that may be available that would lead to changing your recommendation, as well as the rationale for your position. And I'll have some additional comments later, but before we get into too much of a debate, I did want to encourage the council to make sure that... that they were clear and specific.
Roddy.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I supported this motion, and I also voted this in November this way because I felt that was the right decision. I also agreed with the speakers that were here this morning, most of them. There was a couple I didn't agree with, but most of them I did agree with. And I wanted to go to what Mr. Gibson just said. A bird in the hand is worth two in a bush. That's what my father always said. If you got it, keep it, because you might not catch it tomorrow. And to keep this industry viable and to keep jobs in this economy, that's why I supported this. And one more thing, Mr. Chairman. If we do have a vote on this, I would appreciate a roll call vote. Thank you.
Mr. Gibson.
I supported the motion earlier in November when the higher F choice came up. My question right now is, what is the status of the F.37 FMAX estimate as it relates to our availability to draw upon that? Does it constitute a best available scientific advice at this point? And, in fact, is that new information relative to what we had to deal with in November? I've heard the thought expressed several times to bring the SSC committee chair up here and to discuss that. And I'd like to hear what in addition to that, what the legal basis is for us adopting that and using it as our rationale for moving on to the, changing our mind on the F level, because it provides more space between the F we adopt and the likelihood of exceeding the threshold.
Dr. Cadron, would you care to join us? Mr. Preble. Yeah. All right. We're going to take a 10-minute bio break. Okay, we just asked the chair of our SSC, Steve Cadron, to come to the table. There were some specific questions. Mark Gibson and Dr. Pierce had raised an issue, and I'll ask either one of them to restate the question or the issue so that Dr. Cadron knows how to respond. Dr. Pierce?
Yeah, Steve, in the context of Framework 21, all the work that the SSC has done to support this council and its efforts to deal with overfishing concerns, the nature of your recommendations, the SSC recommendations, were those recommendations based on the fact that the SSC had come to terms or had agreed that the FMAX value, the overfishing threshold, is 0.37, not 0.29?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There are some differences of opinion on the status of the estimate of FMAX of 0.37. Since there are differences of opinion, the way I'll answer that is simply reviewing the record. And the record that I'll be referring to are consensus documents, SSC reports, delivered in the last year. In February 2009, the SSC was asked to review the analysis of the overfishing definition as well as the acceptable biological catch and the annual catch limit system for Amendment 15. In those analyses, FMAX was 0.29. The proposed acceptable biological catch was 90% of the overfishing limit. The SSC felt that based on the information content and the assessment that the ABC could be revised to be in better conformance with National Standard 1 guidelines. In August, the SSC revisited this issue. The terms of reference were slightly revised. It was to review the acceptable biological catch for Amendment 15 and Framework 21. So we reviewed several updated analyses from the PDT, who had worked in correspondence with our SSC lead on this, Dr. Pat Sullivan. The primary document that bears on this issue was developed by Devorah, Dr. Hart, dated July 31st. In that document, in response to the SSC's recommendations, had developed a revised yield per crude analysis that estimated Fmax at 0.37. The SSC reviewed that analysis and endorsed that analysis in September of 2009. The SSC reported to the Council that for the purposes of Amendment 15 and Framework 21 acceptable biological catch, Fmax was 0.37. In our report, we note that that is substantially greater than the previous estimate of Fmax, and that should be used as the basis for the ABC recommendations in 2010 in Framework 21 and 2011 Amendment 15. That's the record, the review of the record as I see it. And so that's all SSC consensus statements.
Nancy?
Quite frankly, as far as the new information is concerned and the FMAX estimate, in my view, that's not new information, and it has yet to be peer-reviewed. Everybody's aware that we have a SAWS-ARC that's coming up. It's a benchmark assessment for scallops, and certainly this is going to be part of the discussion during the SAWS-ARC. So, quite frankly, it's not new information that has been peer-reviewed and does not, in my estimation, is not the best available information.
Dave Gable.
Question for Dr. Cadron. My understanding of the models being used here, the CASA model only looks back. It doesn't look forward. It doesn't make forward projections. So in order for the SSC to establish and allow biological catch looking forward, it had to come up with some other way of establishing that. Is that correct?
Well, we should distinguish between the stock assessment model that estimates stock size and fishing mortality, in this case the catch at size analysis, and the reference point model, which is a size-based yield per crude analysis. So the CASA model, catch at size analysis, is used to estimate the most recent stock size and fishing mortality. Those are compared to results from a yield per crude analysis that determines Fmax. The CASA model and Fmax should be consistent with each other in terms of selectivity, natural mortality, meat weight, shell height, but they are separate analyses.
Okay, but we have somehow we had to determine an allowed biological catch for 2010, and we had to set an F rate that that was below that allowed biological catch so that it wouldn't be exceeded. And again, I'm now citing from a document that Nancy Thompson sent to Drew Mankiewicz, that number is an F for 2010 of 0.284. And so I would like to be walked through the calculation that gets us from 0.37 down to 0.284, and then us as managers can figure out what we need for an F to make sure we don't exceed 0.284.
Thank you, David. In response to that, I should review the way that acceptable biological catch is determined, and this is in conformance with National Standard 1 guidelines. The first step is to establish the overfishing limit, in this case in terms of catch. That's why the SSC started with OFL in its ABC determination. For that, we accepted an Fmax of 0.37, together with projected stock sizes that gave us our OFL, and based on the center and the PDT's analysis of risk, we determined that an F of 0.29 gave 25% risk of exceeding Fmax of 0.37. So the 0.29 comes from the 0.37 based on a risk analysis where the 0.29 has a 25% risk of exceeding 0.37. Did that answer your question?
And then it's backed off a little bit more to the F of 0.284 for what?
I think 0.29 and 0.28 for were the same output. It's 0.29 in our SSC document, I believe, in DeVore's analysis, it's 0.28.
It was just a rounding. To be clear, to be more straightforward, in the SSC document, it was rounded to 0.29, but the value is the same. That ABC is 0.284. It was rounded in one document, not rounded in another.
Okay, that clears up one mystery. Thank you.
DeVore?
I want to make one clarification. The 0.284, the stochastic yield per accrued analysis, had 10,000 runs, each time with different parameters, because each taking into account that parameters such as natural mortality and growth and so on are uncertain. 25% of the time, the actual Fmax value was below 0.284, and that's where the risk comes in. So that's a scientific uncertainty. It's not reflecting the fact that whatever you target may be different than what actually is realized. And that's kind of the management uncertainty part of it. All right.
Roddy?
Yeah, I have a question. I don't know if Dr. Cajun can answer this or it's going to be Deidre. I'm not sure which one, but I'll pose the question anyway. And you just said we got to... So we don't overfish the 0.37. You chose 0.29. Can you give us a value so we, if we choose 0.24, that we don't, a percentage that we don't exceed the 0.29? Is it 10%? Is it 15%? Is it 25%?
Sure. Yeah, that was sort of, this is the next stage.
Dr. Ottlin just pointed it out to me.
If I could maybe expand a little bit what he whispered to you. This is the next step in Amendment 15, and this is where we're going with this model, is that we're going to be able to tell you with a quantified estimate for your F target, including management uncertainty, to give you an idea of that quantified uncertainty. We're not there yet. This is in the amendment. To be honest, we presented this to the committee, to this quantitative approach. We recommended the same thing, that for management uncertainty, go down 25% again from your ABC. The Scallop Committee didn't like it. They asked us to develop something else. So these are two options in Amendment 15 that we might end up picking one or the other, but this is why this is not prime time yet, if you will. But to answer your question, we did show that. We have tables... just as an example, I think it was shown a little bit this morning, too. But at a 0.24, assuming some management uncertainty, again, still under debate because the Scallop Committee isn't comfortable with this yet, of 13% probability of overfishing associated with an overall F of 0.24, assuming some management uncertainty. But again, this is all Amendment 15 stuff. And isn't in here.
Pat Kirkle?
Well, I can certainly see where all the confusion is coming in between the 0.37, the 0.24, and the 0.2. I think we need to try very hard to separate the discussions that have, until now, I think, occurred together on where we're going with Amendment 15 and the framework action. And I know that's difficult because we have this other information in front of us. We have the stock assessment coming up. And so to try to get to where I think the discussion needs to be today, it's not entirely clear to me that it was appropriate to use the 0.37, to be honest. I think that not a number that's been peer-reviewed. It's a number that's potentially going to change with the stock assessment later this year. What I do know, though, is that we have still, as our limit, the 0.29. And so the council needs to be focused on the 0.29 as the overfishing limit, and then the consideration of uncertainty and risk, and setting the F rate consistent with staying under the 0.29. So I'm just trying to separate this out because I do think that we've gotten ourselves all twisted up here over this.
Mary Beth?
Thank you for those comments, Pat, because, you know, I think that there's information available to us about a phishing rate of 0.24 that keeps us under the 0.29. So I think it's interesting to talk about the 0.37, but I think we're still in a fine place with the 0.29. And just a question for Deirdre. Did the PDT calculate the probability of exceeding 0.29 in Framework 21 for alternative at 0.24?
No, not in the same way that it was related to the other calculation as presented to the SSC. But all scenarios in the framework were developed understanding, the PDT understood, the current overfishing threshold of 0.29. I don't have a quantified estimate of the uncertainty related to each of the scenarios relative to that 0.29, but each of them was developed understanding that 0.29 was the threshold and that, you know, from our best work we could put into them, all of them would be expected to prevent overfishing at a threshold of 0.29.
Okay, and just a question to the chair. Do you want to just stick with questions for Deirdre and Dr. Catron at this point? Because I was sensitive to Pat's earlier comment about being clear in our justification, and I could offer some, but if you want to stick with questions, I'll do that.
No, we have a motion on the board if you'd like to provide pro or con to the motion. That's kind
okay.
of that's what I'm looking for.
I think I will do that because I think that Pat's comment was one that we should all think about. I think in the past the council is not often, or I shouldn't say not often, has many times not been clear on the justification for and the rationale. So, I mean, for me, the 0.29, the 0.37, I wouldn't spend a lot of time there. I mean, what really swayed me is you know, Deirdre's presentation, slide number 10 at the bottom that says an F level set below ABC, which is equal to 0.284, will actually prevent localized overfishing and increase long-term yields from this fishery. And I think that that is very clear, and I think it does justify this motion. And I would also add just one more thing. I think our colleague from the Mid-Atlantic, his comments on the adjustments that were made, he did it much more eloquently than I, but I believe it adds additional justification, and I would encourage him to perhaps reiterate that.
Dr. Pierce.
Yeah, Mary Beth already made one of the points I wanted to make. If we separate out the 0.37 from the 0.29, with what she just said, there's some rationale to support the position that to provide information that would help Pat deal with the maintenance of the 0.29 as the FMAX value. With that said, however, I still have to go back to a very important point, and that is we're ruled by the SSC in terms of scientific information provided to us. What they give us for recommendations on ABCs specifically and F rates, targets, that is the best scientific information available. That's not disputable. We've worked with that assumption for a long time now, groundfish numbers, you name it. Yes, we've gone back to the SSC, we're seeking clarifications in the past, but in this particular case, there's no need, as just said by Steve. The SSC has reviewed and endorsed this FMAX value of 0.37, due in part to some excellent work done by Devorah Hart. So I see in the analysis that I believe she did, and this was highlighted by Drew a little while ago, that the probability of overfishing with an F target of 0.24 is 13%. Okay, 13%. So I understand where Nancy's coming from. She wants to wait for the next assessment, but we've already gotten an analysis that's already been reviewed by the SSC. It has legs. It has standing. It is the best scientific information available, and it gives me a great feeling of comfort. That as well as the fact that, as already described by again, Rick, I alluded to it, you know, these projections have been fine-tuned. There is far more certainty with these projections, with the analyses done by the PDT and the SSC than before. So we have a greater degree of confidence that we will achieve our F rates, and we will not inadvertently go above those F rates. So, to me, best scientific information has been provided, 13% overall probability of overfishing at 0.24. I mean, the SSC has spoken on this issue, and we need to heed what the SSC has provided to us.
Nancy.
I don't want to belabor this, but I disagree, obviously. My view continues to be that the 0.37 has not been appropriately peer-reviewed, and it has to be peer-reviewed in the context of an benchmark assessment and as compared to the previous FMAX of 0.9, and none of that in my understanding has been done. So my view continues to be that 0.37 is not peer-reviewed and does not represent the best available information.
Paul Howard.
I think in setting the record straight, which we need to do if we change things, we have to be careful about the 0.37, because if you list the 0.37 as the justification, then that ignores the 0.284 for ABC. And so in other words, 0.284 is where, if you look at 57 million pounds as the ABC, if that's where we have to set, 0.284 gives you 57 million pounds. And that's what the SSC is saying. That's the acceptable biological catch. 0.37 would be way higher than that. And if I'm wrong, Steve can address it. So I think that's the case, and that's what we want to make the argument around below 0.284, which is the ABC equivalent F.
Rip.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I wanted to make some overall comments, and like most of the members here, we've been doing a lot of thinking about this Framework 22 allocation decision. I'm not going to focus on the numbers. Instead, I'd like to focus on some other aspects, some of which I think are perhaps forward-looking as to where we go in the future. One thing is disagreement with council decisions. And I'll be the first to say that I think that dissent can be a good thing. In this case, it's made us think about a very important decision to make sure that we have made the best decision that we possibly can. That's a worthwhile process. In varying degrees, that dislike of council decisions is not a new thing. What we have seen, though, and in this case, is that this dissent devolved into what I would call a baseless, personal, vitriolic, and vindictive attack. It's an unfortunate situation, and one that simply makes me want to say not only no, but hell no. That in itself is not a reasonable response. I think that today's discussion has been the kind of reasoned debate that this dissent should generate. It makes me hopeful. The next is transparency. And I hearken back to the first senior editor that I ever dealt with. He said, never say never or always. And I will say that there is no other public process that is more transparent than the council process. It is painfully transparent. There have been no actions taken that were not fully discussed in open meetings with public participation. We are tasked with the job of making hard decisions. It's not a matter of making winners or losers. It's a matter of making the best decision we can concerning the management of common property resources. Process is my next point. As the chair pointed out, the initial push by the industry was directed at the Secretary of Commerce. And it's my understanding that this is where this sort of disagreement where the final council action should be taken. Why that effort was abandoned, I don't know, but obviously it was. While I believe that the council followed the correct process, there was one thing done at the committee level that probably could have been done a little bit better. The committee could have picked a preferred alternative, and that would have allowed the industry the time to focus on and respond to that alternative. Still, I am very concerned what a revision means to the future of the council process, and I wonder if those same elected officials who stood in our face on this issue will stand at our back when we address the process question in the future. I've been asked if I would change my vote on the Framework 21 alternative, and the simple answer is yes, but only if I am convinced that we made a decision without all the facts, if there is some new compelling information, or if we made a wrong decision. I am still listening, although admittedly listening different than I did a day ago. Thank you.
Dave Preble.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I particularly want to thank Rip for what he said. I have a couple of pages of notes that follow that cover essentially the same ground. John said at the beginning of this that at some point it all broke down. It broke down when we violated the spirit of what this council is supposed to be doing. We've all heard the expression, politics is the ultimate contact sport. This was an unusually good example of that. In fact, this one takes the cupcake in my experience for really filthy political maneuvering. What we had is a financially powerful special interest that directly and indirectly produced a campaign of propaganda using unfiltered information technology, a malignant, incompetent yellow press, and a flood of disinformation combined with outright attacks on council members. This is totally unacceptable. Then what flowed from that was misinformed politicians swooping in like vultures to the kill. I'll tell you one thing. My family has been in this area in New England since 1627. I have ancestors on both sides who fought in the American Revolution against just this kind of thing. I don't respond well to a politician putting his boot on my neck. And that's what we had here. I'm having a hard time getting past that to look at this in a reasonable light. It's not the way to do things. This council is supposed to be insulated from that kind of filthy input. The personal attacks against two of the members of this council were outrageous, and they were also based upon lies. We don't have an EDF seat on the council. We have somebody who works for EDF who has the Connecticut obligatory seat. She doesn't have some kind of special green pixie dust that she throws over the council to get done what the green community wants done. That's not how it works. There isn't anybody in this council that doesn't take their responsibilities very seriously. We know what we're dealing with. We know the amount of money. We know the people's lives we're dealing with. But we cannot allow this kind of thing to continue in the future. John said it broke down. Yeah, it sure did. And we better figure out how to put it back together, because if we blow up the council, then the last way that fishermen have to have public input, as Rip pointed out, open public input, is through this council. Lose it, and you're going to wind up with a political solution for every question. Political solutions wind up with no fish. History shows that. So let's get it right, and let's not go through this crap again. And I agree with John, we're going to have to come up with some kind of a policy to make sure it doesn't happen. Thank you.
Terry? Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I voted for the 0.24 in November. But at that point, my support was contingent upon the inclusion of the Groundfish Committee's recommendation of the 90% yellowtail bycatches needed for all 3 years. And the Groundfish Committee's rationale was really strictly to provide an incentive to reduce the yellowtail bycatch without crippling the scallop industry's catch. And I remain concerned about yellowtail bycatch, especially as we launch the sectors. We've got a fragile process that's, as we talked about yesterday, is going to have, and the industry's got some tough times ahead. But the comments from the ground fishery and communications with multiple members of the ground fish industry have convinced me that the inclusion of the 90% yellowtail bycatch measure for 2010 isn't necessary. And what I want to do is really commend the industry for working together to come up with a resolution since November. That's how it should be. We're here, Rip and Dave have just mentioned a number of issues, and I know as a council we're going to be addressing on how not to have this type of debate again. But with all that said, I support this motion as proposed.
Doug.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've really appreciated this debate here and hearing both sides of the issue here. My concern, even from the beginning of December, has been the process that's got us here. As you know, in the recent past, there's been desires on the part of some council members to reconsider certain decisions that we've made here. And it has been almost a default policy that we weren't going to do that. And I applaud, Mr. Chairman, your suggestion that after we deal with this that we come up with a policy as to when we're going to reconsider. Because if we reconsider for some and not for others, that is putting others at an extreme disadvantage. I think the reconsiderations that were asked before have had similar economic impacts. In fact, I think it's even been greater on a percentage basis than the impacts that the scallop industry might have to deal with today. So if we are going to move forward, and I applaud your desire that in the next day or next council meeting that we do consider a policy on reconsideration. It needs to be something that will be equal and fair to all industries. Thank you.
Dave Gaethel.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to quote somebody a little greater than probably anybody in this room, and that was Sir Winston Churchill, who said, "It's not enough that we do our best. Sometimes we have to do what's required." And as such, I'd like to bring this debate back to the crucial issue here, which is basically management uncertainty. Dr. Cadran's just walked us through how they filtered out scientific uncertainty. Now we have to deal with the management uncertainty. And the management uncertainty comes in about five or six different parts. The first one is the actual landings of the fishery versus the projected landings. This is the realized F versus the F that we set. The last one that we can more or less reliably calculate, we set a general F of 0.2. That was what we hoped to achieve. Our projected F at this time is actually close to 0.3. So apparently there's quite a bit of management uncertainty there. Our general landings target was 46 million pounds. The 2009 projected actual landings is 57 million pounds. That's quite a large difference. It just illustrates the fact that it's very difficult to calculate in advance the landings per unit effort. And that's because, as a fisherman, I know that I'm pretty good at what I do. And if there's something out there and there's no trip limit, such as what happens in the open access areas, the good people are going to catch a lot. That's what we do. And I have no doubt that there's a lot of good people sitting in this room today. And they're going to go out there and they're going to catch what they can catch. But nevertheless, I still have to deal with that issue in setting an F rate that won't exceed the allowed biological catch. Now, some of the other things that confound this are things like you can carry 10 days over. I don't know in advance how many days are going to get carried over. If I'm a businessman here today and I'm going, hey, I'm going to get to fish a lot less next year than this year, and I've already made a living this year, I might carry those days over and fish them next year. I've got to figure out how to factor that in. I have to figure out the fact that lost trips in access areas can be taken in open areas. How am I supposed to account for that? I don't know. I have to take a guess. And based on the guesses that have been made by the council in the last few years, they haven't guessed all that well. They've set an F rate, and then they've gone back at the end of the year and calculated the realized F rate, which is the only thing that can be done at the moment, and that number has been substantially higher, to the point of almost being or possibly being in an overfishing condition in 2009. Now, looking forward to 2010, what information do I have? I have information that we've discovered a bunch of boats we weren't counting. I have information that indicates that we've revised our catch per unit effort up, and we think we're accounting for it better. And I have to factor that in as a mitigating factor that maybe the F I set this year, whatever it is, will actually be closer to the realized F when it's calculated sometime in 2011. But the fact is, I still don't know. What I do know is I can't exceed an F of 0.29. That's what I know. That's all that I know. And the rest of it is judgment. And in November, a lot of people such as myself sat at this table and made that judgment based on the information we have been given. And so far today, I have not heard anything that changes that information. I'm waiting to hear it, but I haven't heard it yet. And, so that's still the core issue here. Will 0.24 not exceed 0.29? And I haven't heard anybody at the council or in the audience tell me that they can guarantee that. Well, the only thing I can guarantee you is that we've projected a catch rate of 41 million pounds at an F of 0.2. And based on our past performance, I'll virtually guarantee you, matter of fact, I'll bet anybody in the room that it's going to be higher than 41 million pounds. And this is what we have to deal with. So I'd like to see this debate come back and focus strictly on that fact. That's the only thing that matters here at this point. Who's going to convince me that an F of 0.24 isn't going to exceed 0.29 based on all the information we have in front of us, when the last calculable one we have indicates that it's going to exceed it by quite a bit? So that's what you've got to base your decision on. Nothing more, nothing less. The rest of it's all rhetoric.
Rick Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the difficulty that you find yourselves in today, given the nature of the process concerns, as well as all the interests that are affected by this decision. Both of our councils have been in difficult situations over the last 6 months with potential reconsiderations of decisions, reconsiderations of SSC findings, and these things all beg for some discussion about process and process integrity, and I appreciate your concerns there. I also appreciate and applaud your leadership during this difficult process. I think ultimately the discussion of management uncertainty probably is among the most important considerations here, and it was important during the November deliberations, but I think looking back over that decision, I think we do have some additional information in front of us today in terms of the clarifications on the LPUE basis for open area DAS catch projections. And I think you can look at that without getting ahead of the FMP and trying to consider a different overfishing definition, which I think would probably be premature. The overfishing definition will be amended when we go through Amendment 15, and that will allow us to bring new reference points into the plan. But I don't think you have to do that today to reconsider this decision. I think You can look back at the information regarding management uncertainty. And again, if you look in Framework 19's projections and Framework 21, we now have a 45% higher basis for daily LPUE catches on open area DAS projections. And that I think, gives me significantly more comfort than I would have had in November had I had an opportunity to vote on the options. So I think that is an important point. There were other considerations, obviously, that went into the rationale for the original decision, and one related to yield. And I think the yield projections and the trade-offs that are described in the document, frankly, are not very compelling. They would ask that we take that we cut the industry or the landings in 2010 by 14% for just a 1% cumulative gain over the next 7 years. And that seems to be a trade-off that's not compelling. We did hear testimony today about some of the significant implications of whipsawing the fishery and going down to 41 million pounds and going up to 62 million pounds. Markets adjust in the long run to changes in quantity, but in the short run, that could be significantly disruptive. And I think those social and economic considerations are certainly relevant today. And I think the turtle options and actions that we took at the last meeting and developed through the committee process are robust and responsive to the terms and conditions and reasonable and prudent measures in the turtle biological opinion across the different F-rates. So I think at either F-rate, we have an action that's sufficiently responsive to the biop to address the protected resources concerns. But again, I think the thing that sticks out to me is the difference in how we're accounting for management uncertainty, and again, the fact that the LPUE is 45% more conservative than it was last time around and reflects current catch rates in the fishery. So I think that's a significant point. But again, I do appreciate your process concerns, and thank you again for your leadership on this issue.
Mr. Rick, I have Jim Odlin.
Yeah, I voted for the 0.24 back in November, and I probably didn't spend enough time saying why. To me, both of these options meet the mortality objectives required. The PDT has told us that. So then what do? You look back and you have to look at the economic analysis. And the economic analysis, as Rick just laid out, is very thin. It gives you a benefit way down the road, and it's very thin. So, okay, I've got to weight that economic analysis. And, you know, having experience in business and knowing what happens when you displace a product in the market, it just doesn't come back. It's not that easy. You got two ways to get it back. One, you buy it back, which means you've got to undercut whoever replaced you. That's if you can get it back. And then it takes a long time. And we have an example in haddock. There used to be trailer truck loads of haddock fillets sold in upstate New York. And we got displaced in that market when we lowered our catch. And now you can't sell a haddock in upstate New York. It's all Chinese haddock, caught in Norway and in there. We're getting prices for haddock now that we got 20 years ago. So that's just an example of what happens when you lose your place in the market. So I looked at the economic analysis, and I mentioned it then, that I think it's very thin return for the risk on displacing that product in the market. Then there was the argument that, well, we need to do this because of bycatch of yellowtails. And I need to submit that we should not set the fisher mortality rate of any fisheries based on the bycatch of another fisheries. That would be, again, like setting the haddock mortality rate at zero because we have a southern New England winter flounder problem. You set the mortality rate in the fisheries of where you think it should be, both economically and biologically, and then you deal with the bycatch. Now, there's several ways we can do that. We're going to talk about that this afternoon, but I can't see lapping bycatch into setting the mortality objectives of the fishery. That's just my personal view. So, again, I support the motion. I think the adjustments made, again, 45% increase in the CPU on the scallop fisheries, which is highly labor-intensive to cut these things. I'm shocked they can get that kind of increase. I can't see that they could get that kind of increase again. You just cannot keep. It's labor-intensive to get these things out of a shell and into a bag. So I think that they're accurate there. So I'm comfortable with that. And let's see, there was one more point I wanted to cover.
7%.
Yeah, the likelihood of, you know, the six, well, forget that one. So that's it. I know. And I agree with Rip. I think there's been mistakes made, both in looking at the data and both in the process. The Scullup Committee didn't give us a preferred alternative that then the industry would have been able to key in on and probably would have had a bigger effort and explained to us why we were kind of making the wrong choice. Secondly, the scallop industry probably went a little bit asleep and not doing that in the first place because they never imagined that we would pick 0.20 because the economic analysis was so thin. So I think there's lessons on both sides. We ought to strive to make sure we have a preferred alternative in the future, and it's a message to the industry. You better look at the lowest one and respond to that in vigor rather than just assume that they wouldn't pick that one because chances are that somebody may decide to. So that's my rationale, and I think we need to support 0.24.
Pat Kirkle.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to abstain on the motion. This is a very awkward situation for the agency. The council, rather, took final action on this framework at their November meeting, and, of course, the recommendation is now in front of the agency. So for that reason, and because it's the agency's practice, typically their typical practice, not to vote on a final council action, even if it's a final council action, I'm going to abstain. Having said that, I'd like to make some comments. We're certainly very sympathetic to the job issue and the short-term economic impacts. These are challenging economic times, and it's very difficult for coastal communities. But I also want to point out that the national policy is to manage for the long term. As John pointed out and others have pointed out, this is a very unusual situation, perhaps unprecedented, not just here in New England, but really nationwide, to revisit a final action that the council has taken. So the council does need to ask itself whether it wants to go down the road of reopening every controversial decision. When the council made the decision in November, it was a very thorough and deliberative process. They considered the scientific advice. They considered the uncertainty and the risk. They considered the impacts on turtles and habitat and bycatch. And they made the decision and clearly explained the rationale for the decision. So these are the things that the council needs to think about in changing that decision, and again, to provide the clear rationale for the change in that decision.
Sally.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Framework 21 was developed over the course of 8 months. It was initiated in April of last year. As was pointed out, the Scallop Committee did not make a recommendation on a preferred alternative. As chair, I tried to get a preferred on the table. I even asked council during that last meeting if there was a way that I could make a motion for any of the options just to get something on the table. And his answer was no, not really. Process-wise, I think having a preferred is absolutely the best way to go. When you have an idea of the direction a committee or the council is leaning, then you're giving a signal of what people should pay attention to. The committee did narrow down the scenario alternatives to 3. It probably could have narrowed it down to 2. And even though it didn't, it sent some pretty clear signals that the new closed area was not something that the committee was supporting. As everyone at the table knows, whether it's scallops or groundfish or whatever it is that we're talking about, I always argue in favor in terms of process for us to get a preferred on the table for just this reason. That does not obviously always happen. It didn't happen in this framework. It didn't happen on a lot of key decisions in Amendment 16. It makes it more difficult when that's the case. Back to the motion. What David Gabel said is true. This does come down to what level of risk the council is comfortable with. It also considers impacts on endangered species. And we also have to, are compelled to, consider the allocation between these two major fisheries, the scallop fishery and the groundfish fishery. We must consider the impact on the groundfish fleet. The issue of yellowtail allocations bounced back and forth, I don't know how many times, between the groundfish committee and the scallop committee, both of the PDTs, both the advisory panels, many times over the course of several months. And there was extensive and understandable concern about yellowtail allocations coming from the groundfish fleet. They're dealing, obviously, with stocks that are in a rebuilding plan and represent extremely limiting stocks, especially in southern New England, where I'm from. Both committees wanted to find a way through this next tough year for the groundfish fleet. Now, we're told today by Northeast Seafood Coalition that they are working something out. I can't tell you how much I would have liked to have heard that several months ago. Nonetheless, it does come down to what level of risk the council is comfortable with. All that said, I do have a question related to the motion and would suggest a potential perfection because of the range of issues that this really does affect, either a perfection or clarification from the maker. And that is how this motion relates to the attendant changes in the yellowtail allocation and the sea turtle measures in Framework 21 and in Framework 44. So I would look to you, Mr. Chairman, and ask for some clarification on those issues, because obviously we can't just have one number change in Framework 21 because it's all interconnected. Thank you.
I'll turn to the maker or seconder to define their intent on those other issues.
Well, regarding yellowtail, I assume we would go back to the analyses that we reviewed back in November to determine what allocation of yellowtail on a percent basis of the TAC would have to go to the scallopers versus the ground fishermen. I don't have that in front of me right now. It depends upon the area, of course. That would be my intent. However, if someone would like to address that issue in a different way with a different kind of motion, fine enough. But that's my intent to go to the analyses that are already in the framework that relate to the yellowtail allocation with 0.24 versus 0.20.
So it would be 100% for 2010 and then 90-90 as we previously stated.
Right.
Rodney, is that your understanding?
Yes, but I've got an additional thing to add, if that's okay.
Yep.
The good thing about being old is you remember all the mistakes you make. The best thing about being old is being able to owner up to your mistakes. Through this whole process, we've all made a lot of mistakes, and I've pointed them out several times, starting with Amendment 5. I've always said it was built on a weak foundation. And if you don't have a good, solid foundation, the end result is not so. But industry made mistakes, council made mistakes. It's true. Now, knowing that you made a mistake, you got to own up and try to correct that mistake. If we go away and not try to correct that mistake, we have done everybody an injustice. We have done industry an injustice. We have done this process an injustice. So that's why I support this motion, because deep inside, I don't know if there's any, but I probably got the most sea time in this room. And I've probably caught the most yellowtails in this room. I know how to catch them, and I know how to avoid them. And at the council meeting, I made several suggestions how these guys can avoid their yellowtail bycatch, and it's overlooked. You need to give the industry, they're the ones that are going to come up with these innovative measures, not us sitting at this table. You need to give them the opportunity to see if they can continue fishing this year and reduce their yellowtail bycatch. And if we don't give them that opportunity, we've done everybody an injustice. Thank you.
Frank Bob.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I came in, I was very concerned when this was put back on the agenda because of the process issues. I was concerned on the timing, on how we got it into the Federal Register and how fast it got in there, how it went against everything else that we've done for every other item that we've taken. Having said that, I said I was going to come in with an open mind, and I did. I listened to everything that was said. I didn't agree with all the speakers that spoke today. There was a few that I thought were over the top. I agreed with both of them. I think they presented a very good case. I do think the appropriate road was to go to the Secretary of Commerce after our decision. There probably hasn't been a council meeting in the last 2 years that I haven't spoke about process, whether it was for SSC, for up or down. A lot of the times it did make a difference. I didn't care what the decision was. I just wanted to make sure the process was followed correctly. I feel in this case, this is probably going to be one of the most difficult votes that I'm going to take. Like I said, I think everybody presented a very good case, but I am very, very concerned about the process here. And I think, I know we're going to have that discussion afterwards, but we're setting a precedent here, even if we have that discussion. So I'm still open-minded, but I'm very concerned.
Dave Preble.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think Jim Otto made an excellent point that when we're setting tax, that other issues and other fisheries should not be a part of that discussion. I think he's absolutely right. I think we made that mistake. As far as not selecting a preferred alternative at the committee meeting, I take a substantial amount of the blame for that because I resisted at the final meeting naming a preferred alternative because I wanted to see a lot more information put out. And I think a lot of that was because of the – in fact, I know that most of that was because of the confusion over the yellowtail flounder. The state that I represent stands to get badly hurt by a reduction in the availability of yellowtail flounder by going from 0.20 to 0.24, or at least that's the way it was when I walked in here today. Now I understand that, that issue has been settled where it should have been settled anyway with industry, and that's no longer apparently an issue that – we have to be concerned about. But one thing it does point out to me, above anything else, is that this yellowtail flounder issue demonstrates the need to combine some of these plans. We can't continue to have the number of individual plans, all with actions going on at the same time that we've had in the past. I know with the Pacific Council, I believe they have four plans for a larger and more complex set of fisheries. We need to get to work with the Interspecies Committee and straighten this problem out. This just got out of hand too early. And the last thing I'd like to say is that I looked at Dvorak's email, and there are two things that stood out. One, she said that I would add that while it would be desirable from a socioeconomic view to keep a constant landing stream, this is difficult due to the high variability in scallop recruitment. And then she also said, finally, it is worth putting this in a longer-term perspective. The projected F-21 landings will be higher than every single year prior to 2001 and will be nearly four times the landings in 1998. Thus, the worst landings under current management would be better than the best year before the current rotational management was adopted. When recruitment came out in 1994, the fishery totally collapsed. Now it's just a minor one-year dip. Modest variations in landings such as this must be expected, but they are far better than the bust and boom that occurred previously. So where does that leave us? We have to treat this fishery as a potential for a boom and bust fishery. I can't support the motion.
Mark Gibson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Frank Blount captured a lot of my sentiments. There did a number of speakers, so I won't repeat all of those. I was certainly concerned about process as well and was, on the one hand, prepared to defend that my original vote notwithstanding. I came here today looking for information which would indicate to me that there are significant long-term benefits both to the industry and to the resource. Were we to defer some of the fishing mortality rate now, and that also that there is a some larger risk than we had originally envisioned. I didn't find any of that. We have a margin for management uncertainty here, which is grounded in some improvements in projecting catch rates. Even if we do exceed that F, we don't have accountability measures in place right now, so that we would not have to respond dramatically to that. Those are under development. So I don't see a great risk here, and it's very clear from industry testimony in their present that, again, the one bird in the hand is much more important to them than the two in the bush. The two in the bush don't look very fat to me, and they still don't look very catchable, so I'm going to stay with my original position and support the motion. Thank you.
Jim Fair.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm also very concerned about preserving the integrity of the process, and looking forward, I hope that we can prevent something like this from happening again. Having said that, I think that if we had the same debate at the November meeting, then the outcome would have been very different, or at least partially different. So I'm prepared to change my vote and support the motion today.
Mike Larry.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm in support of the motion as I was in November. I think the revisions that the PDT made with the addition of 25 additional permits and the addition of 528 pounds per day for the open area trips will put that make that 0.24 below the 57 million threshold. Thanks.
Anyone else? Okay, it's been requested a roll call vote. I'll ask Paul Howard to call out your name, answer yes, no, or abstain.
Please answer yes, no, or abstain. Mark Alexander.
Yes.
Rodney Avila.
Yes.
Frank Plump.
No.
Rip Cunningham.
Yes.
Jim Fair.
Yes.
Mark Gibson.
Yes.
David Gafel.
No.
Doug Grote.
Abstain.
Pat Kirkle.
Abstain.
Mike Leary.
Yes.
Glenn Libby.
No.
Sally McGee.
No.
Jim Odlin.
Yes.
David Pierce.
Yes.
Dave Preble.
No.
Terry Stockwell.
Yes.
Mary Beth Tooley.
Yes.
Motion carries.
Motion carries 10-5 with two abstentions. Is there anything further under scallops? Tom Neese?
This relates to scallops and yellowtail. I want to make sure that we're clear that we understand Dr. Pierce's statement of intent as saying that the yellowtail allocation remains at 100%, 90%, 90%. That will, because of the higher F, that will change the yellowtail allocations between the two fisheries. I just want to make sure that is what the council did, with absent a motion. And that all we have to do is send a letter to the service in order to make that change.
I see no disagreement. Jim Kendall.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I'm probably not the one to best speak to this, but as a former council member, I can imagine, and I can only imagine, what gone through the minds of some of the people. First, you're feeling affronted because the industry seemingly went above and beyond you to try and rectify what they felt was a serious mistake. And I know some of you took it personally, and we often do the same thing, so that part I can understand. But I do appreciate the honest vote that came out of this, and like I say, the misgivings that a lot of people must have had on this. I also hope that we don't have to go this route, and I hope we don't set a precedent for others. But I do have to appreciate the the encouragement we got from a lot of people outside of the scallop industry, even though they had misgivings that we were getting rich while they were getting a lot slimmer. And that's not really the case. And I don't really think this is going to impact the yellowtail, because I think the overall effort would go down. But there are a couple of things I would like to mention is, it tended to get lost in some of the discussions. Overfishing was often referred to. It was seldom referred to as localized overfishing, which is a huge difference. There's a big distinction among the two. The only reason that a localized overfishing is occurring is because we haven't managed the closed areas correctly. That can be rectified, and I think that if the council looks at it in that fashion, yes, it's a lot along the lines of having an account in a bank of $1 million and you're starving out on the street because you can't draw down from it. I think the council needs to find a way to look at that and not put some valuable possessions where you can look at them but you can't use them. I think that's a terrible mistake. And given that we're the council and the Magnuson Act says you're supposed to do this for the benefit of the full nation, we have to start looking at it nationwide and not those that can make the best argument. So once again, I thank you for taking the time to do this. I'm sorry probably that we had to do it, but I'm glad that the turnout was the way it did, and I think it made the right effort. Thank you again.
Okay, we'll take an hour break for lunch. When we come back, we'll try to get back on schedule.